Thank you, Esteban. I'm sorry, Kevin, I didn't mean to throw you under the bus right away, but you told me Ryan Burrow was doing the news.
I may have misunderstood. I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Now I'm throwing Ryan Burrow under the bus. I'll bring everyone down with me. I really will.
How about Bill?
Bill worked really hard yesterday after a two-week break.
You got to ease into it.
You know, bit by bit, these New Year's resolutions, you got to take it slowly. So he did one day, and he'll be back next week. So, Dane Neal, thank you for coming in.
Oh, no. Happy to do it. And I saw you, I heard you mention Esteban, and what that made me think of the perfect holiday gift. Of course, it's past, so maybe in the future you got time to save up for it. But it's that guitar tech that tells you can learn how to play guitar in about an hour. He's got his own guitar. You need to buy it. He looks like Zorro. He's got, like, the Zorro hat on.
Where do you see him online?
Late night infomercial, along with the,
you know. You need to get a life.
The gazelle and Dr. Shabag and his amazing melon.
What's his amazing melon?
It's like a beauty treatment or what? I mean, this is what's on at night. You got to stay up.
Why do you watch this?
I don't know.
Don't you have Netflix or cable or something like that?
Those are great suggestions. I do not have that. But it's mostly serial killer shows. I mean, because that's what's on at night. And then terrible infomercials.
Have you ever ordered something from an infomercial?
No, I've never gone that far. What did you order?
I'm embarrassed to say it.
Was it the food saver? Because that actually works.
No, I don't know what
it's
that
like,
is either.
It's like a shrink wrap.
Thing. Like a vacuum pack kind of thing. I was watching, this was years ago when I would work all nights on the radio, and then I would come home and it's still kind of early in the morning, and so you can't go to sleep right away.
No.
And it was probably the Home Shopping Club, and they had these little end tables that were, at the time, really cute because brass was very popular. They were brass and glass, and it was kind of a U-shape, so the bottom portion of the table would go under the couch, and then you could pull it kind of like a TV tray.
Right, nice. Those are for people who couldn't get up under them. But go ahead.
I also ordered the electric stair thing. The stair lift. I love that thing.
Well, I can't wait
to get old.
Or the hover round. Where you can just ride around.
Oh, yeah.
And the theme takes me where I want to go. Right? You just get on your hover around. You're at the Grand Canyon. They show you, like, seeing the sights. You're in France.
I love when you go to the Jewel or Mariano's and you see two lovely little old ladies who are there shopping together, and they're in the little scamps or whatever they're called. They're single file line because they can't fit in the aisles if they're side by side. But anyway, I ordered these tables and I used them for quite some time. They weren't that expensive, but it was kind of nice to have, you know, if you wanted to have a chip and dip while you were watching TV, you could just pull it right up so it was in front of you and put your bevy on there, you know.
It's nice to hear some positive because they're so maligned, right? Those shows, you know, hey, it's all scammer. It's no good, and you get a free one if you only pay double the shipping and handling, which is actually more than the price of the free one. So, I mean, it's one of those things where it just, it's good to hear some success stories coming out of the late night infomercial purchase.
I know, and I probably shouldn't talk about this, and I probably should have cleared this, but Mike Lindell and MyPillow having some issues. I got to tell you, I slept on mine last night. I absolutely love it. He's in trouble from the Better Business Bureau because his
pillows are too comfortable.
His sale is lasting too long. It has to be like a special, like a 2-for-1 deal. It can't be like that all the time, or it's not a deal. You know, like it has to be on sale now. Here's a 2-for-1 deal. I love MyPillow. Mike Lindell, thank you for helping me sleep every night.
I think in situations like that, you can tell that he should have a genuine passion exemption. Because when you see that infomercial, I mean, you know, God love you. Whatever you are excited about, if you're so excited, yeah, we all have trouble sleeping sometime. But none of us get up, build our own factory in Minnesota, employ over 700 people, and become the official pillow of the National Sleep Foundation. I mean, I think he's genuinely excited.
I know. So I see that. It's not like it's.
And the testimonials?
I love it.
Right?
I love MyPillow, and I'm not stuttering. And speaking of sleep, I was just telling Kevin today, I wake up like every 2 hours. I don't know what it is because I don't want to oversleep because I'm always late for things, Dane.
Okay.
Aren't you late for things too sometimes?
I'm slightly almost not on time, but I wouldn't consider it late exactly.
Listen, I get here right before showtime and you got here after me, so that's saying something.
Just in the nick of time.
You're like the female me.
Yeah.
Or I'm the male you.
Well, I don't know. That's a little. Well, we'll have to talk about that during the break.
Well, also, sometime either today or tomorrow, I don't know. We've got a lot of guests booked. We have a lot of ideas. Again, Dane Neal filling in for Bill Leff all day today, correct?
All day today.
Okay. I don't remember who's in tomorrow. Kevin, do we know who's in tomorrow on the revolving door, I guess? I think Frank Fontana.
Oh, nice.
And for the first half. And then Dean Richards. And then on Friday, my husband, Jimmy Mack, we have worked together in radio before. We've done a podcast, Snide Remarks Radio, which there are probably 4 years of them online at SnideRemarksRadio.com. We might swear in that one because it's a podcast. So he'll be on Friday morning.
And you guys took a vow of no Star Wars talk, correct? Because
I did say, can we talk about other things?
For at least one segment. Well, the new Star Wars movie, I just got to tell you, in defense of everything that Jimmy Mack will be excited about, it's getting some great reviews.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it.
I loved it.
Yeah, it was really, I mean, action-packed, and it didn't have any of those, you know, there was no like kind of weird cutesy thing in there that they always try to throw in, I guess, to sell plush animal toys. So there was no Ewoks. You know,
no, but I love the new droid, KY or whatever his name is.
Something like that. I haven't looked it up.
I'm not sure what it is, but I like him. He's like, you know, a compilation of all parts of things.
He's got an edge.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
You can appreciate, right?
And then on Friday afternoon, Mike Toomey from WGN Morning News.
So in good hands.
This is going to be a very fun week. But also what I want to talk about is when I'm having trouble sleeping, I read, and we'll talk about it either later today or later this week, there's an 8-minute song that is supposed to be the perfect song to help you fall asleep.
Oh, wow.
We can't play all 8 minutes of it because we don't want people to fall asleep at work or driving or what have you. We can't fall asleep. But I'm going to try
it. Is that okay? Yes, I think we should try it. But, you know, under a controlled setting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Know, you know. Like hypnotizing on the radio doesn't work either. You know, you have to do the disclaimer of, you know, if you're driving, please pull over. Because you don't want to tell people not to listen.
You don't want to tell them that, but then also you don't want to be responsible for, you know, Luke into my eyes. Of course, you can't do that. But, yeah, you want people to be able to maintain a sense of alertness while they're driving. Sure, you don't want to put them at risk. We're here to entertain, not to maim.
Entertain, not maim. I like this. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then Dane Neal in for Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder on 720 WGN. Wendy Snyder here. Bill Leff worked really hard yesterday, so he has earned another week off. That just kills me. It really does.
Well, although, when you've earned it, Wendy, you know.
We did get a bonus day because I thought we were back on Monday, but is this the first time that people got an extra holiday because the holiday fell on the weekend?
You know, Wendy, just by the you're looking at calendars and just the thousands of years of human civilization, I've got to think no. But it was really actually, and it's weird that you mentioned it, it was the first time that I really felt like, well, that's a pleasant surprise.
I know.
You know, because you think you just get screwed, right? That it's just... Maybe in the past, they didn't feel obligated to give you a day off. Maybe that was, you know, the company wins as opposed to the worker wins. But now it seemed like, and you know what? Everybody stuck to it. Where the banks were closed.
No
mail.
The
mail guy didn't show up. Garbage man was home.
Amazon was not delivering.
Yeah, you felt almost obligated to, like, relax. Well, I better, because everything's everybody else is.
Well, I'll tell you that Christmas came and went. I'm glad it's over with. I don't know if you're... How old are your kids?
We've got a now 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 5-year-old.
And not one of them are into these Hatchimals?
No. And if the commercial just happened to be on, of course they would be into it. No, Vivi's still got sort of a Frozen thing. You know, she likes Barbies. I don't know how they manage that, those Barbie people. Kudos to you for staying relevant.
And Barbie people?
Well, whoever's running the Barbie promo,
I got it.
The marketing team at Barbie... You know, hey, we're old news. No way. Let's make Barbie, you know, current. And she's doing it. There's Barbies around. And then this is the thing that, you know, you would like for some toys to go by the wayside. You understand that way back in the past when all of our toys were made out of leather and wood or you know, taxidermied animals, whatever.
Right. There weren't a lot of things to choose from.
Right. You're stuck with like something like Play-Doh, which is really just a stinky ball of
salt.
Colored glob of something. But still... My brother-in-law came in with, it had to be a 75-pound box of Play-Doh, every single color in all those little containers. And if only those containers could contain it, right? Because they never go back in. You know, in the end, it'll be, I think, a progressive throwing away of the hard, you know, rock substance that Play-Doh turns in, trying to peel it out of carpeting
I know.
And off of things. Play-Doh is just, whoever came up with it, it was just
Mr. Doe.
Yeah, Mr. Play. Ebenezer Play and Jebediah Doe.
Did you ever play with it when you were younger?
I'm sure basically because it was either that, rocks or dirt, you know, or sticks or
something. Yeah, again, we didn't have much to choose
from. Right, it wasn't
from.
Like, yeah, we didn't
but
have.
But I loved it. I loved playing with it, and I wouldn't let my kids play with it because of the mess.
Well, it is messy. I mean, as a kid, I was happy to play with anything, so I didn't have any kind of problem. It was only later on when they got it, and then you take it out. I'm not sure what the shelf life, hopefully they've improved it, but I think it turns rock hard overnight. It's like, you know, you
leave seal it up.
Yeah, and then you blend it. It comes in a rainbow of color. But as soon as you and they show the pictures are deceiving on television. Well, they'll show like, oh, we made a pretend hamburger. Or we're making
right.
Food. Once it all gets together, it turns into just kind of a brownie.
Exactly.
Gross color all blended. And you can't once it's into stuff, you can't get it out.
Blame all right. Them. Well, the reason I say it's salty, and I would expect Steve Bertrand to know this. Did you ever eat Play-Doh?
Well, I've tasted many things just in an exploratory way, so I'm aware that it. But
it's really salty.
I never thought it was good enough to like. I never thought, well, here's an option. Let's just eat it.
Well, I didn't like digest it. I just, you know, you'd taste it. I don't know that I swallowed it, but Bertrand, you had to have tasted Play-Doh because you've tasted everything. He's not talking. Yipes. Is he listening to this show or is Eric and Kathy still on?
No, you're
listening to Bob and Marianne now that they're back?
Missed them.
Did you ever eat Play-Doh? Because you have eaten
absolutely,
some.
Absolutely.
See,
yeah.
Isn't it? What's the first word that comes to mind?
Play-Doh? Salty?
Yep.
Yeah.
See,
and he was in kind of like the isolation booth. So he did not know.
Right, he didn't know
the answer, right?
We keep him in the isolation booth.
A lot of
every
people like
to
make it into those little noodle shapes and eat it, but I just take a chunk out like it's a tomato right out of the garden.
Steve, you laugh, and I'm sort of laughing, but there is a program. Have you seen this program, Wendy, and for the listeners, called My Strange Obsession?
Yes, people eating Play-Doh.
Well, Play-Doh would be, I mean, it would be right in the team photo. It would be a welcome addition to the program. We saw it the other day, and it is the strangest thing. Like this lady who won't trim her fingernails or toenails, and they're incredibly, and she
and
goes,
they're curved
and she
curly.
Goes bowling, right. And she's,
how does she stick her finger in a bowling ball?
She
doesn't.
She grabs it kind of, kind of just cupping it, grabbing it, throwing it. And then there's a lady who eats 13 pounds of dirt every day, and she's worried about getting found out by the neighbors because she's running in their gardens eating dirt. She eats dirt every day.
That's a condition though, where your body's not getting enough. Dirt. I don't know, soil, but some kind of, some kind of mineral. It really is a condition where people eat dirt.
Well, what condition is it? Because the next feature was a lady that eats dryer sheets. She eats like a big box of dryer sheets every day.
They do smell good.
Yeah, that she said that fresh. She said they taste like they
smell.
Gives
you good breath.
Yeah.
But she's a little fluffy.
But no static cling,
no.
Which is great.
Yeah, she's great.
All right. Well, the big hot toy this holiday season was this thing called a Hatchimal. And honestly, I didn't know much about it until I heard Anna DeVlanta saying that they were sold out and she was trying to get one for her daughter and she was losing her mind. And how do you get a Hatchimal? Kevin, you bought one for your nephew or you know?
Santa got one, I think, for the nephew.
Oh, Santa brought it. See, Santa knows what's hip and happening.
Well, that guy's got connections.
He's on top
well,
of
yeah, because yeah. We can't get it, but Santa right. Could. All right. Here's the thing that's in the news. Hatchimals are stupid, if you want my opinion. It's a Furby-like toy. It's, some kind of bird-like creature and it's in an egg about the size almost of a football. So maybe a little smaller than a football. So somewhat large.
A good size.
And every once in a while, as I don't know what you do, but part of the eggshell lights up and then a little crack comes off and ultimately it hatches, hence the name, a Hatchimal. They've been all the rage and there's this father in Vancouver, British Columbia, who bought his 6-year-old son a Hatchimal. And he is written to the company because he said, I guess they talk like a Furby where they'll say stuff like, feed me or pull my shell off or something like that or hug me. But this father said it's not saying hug me.
Oh, no.
It's saying the F word me. And Kevin and I were listening to it this morning and I, regardless of what it's saying, there's some weird breathiness here. We've edited it just in case, but here's what the father, Nick Gallego in Vancouver, says his Hatchimal is saying to his son.
That's really tough on this thing.
Remember, it says what it says.
That doesn't sound like a cute animal anyway.
I know.
It sounds like a weird kind of stalker voice. I mean, I guess it's hard to get, especially as we kind of move a lot of those, you know, kind of audio jobs overseas, you know, like the phone banks and the helplines. Maybe there's just some, hey, you want to read some Hatchimal lines, you know, and maybe nobody's doing quality control.
Well, is this a prank? Because it doesn't sound like...
Wouldn't it be high and squeaky, like, hello, you know, or feed me, or wouldn't it be like that?
Why didn't you do the voice?
I don't know. Hey, Hatchimal people.
Isn't this creepy? Regardless of what it's saying, and we edited it just to be on the safe side, but Kevin, it didn't sound like the F me, did it?
No, but it was like you couldn't really make out completely what it was saying, I didn't think.
It certainly didn't sound like hug me. It sounded like something me. But listen to the breathing, because that's what's creeping me out about this whole Hatchimal thing, which is a Furby and an egg.
That's really tough on this thing.
Remember, it says what it says.
It doesn't even sound like it should sound.
No.
It wasn't even like an animal, like growly noise. I mean, or it's if it's a, like a bagawk.
It's supposed to be cute.
Yeah, right. There's nothing cute about that.
That's creepy.
It's creepy.
That's like Dennis Hopper hatching out of an egg.
No,
mommy.
Are you sure, Wendy? Because I think when any time a toy becomes very popular, there is knockoffs of the toys, you know, that are made from around the world, and maybe they don't have the same linguistic sensibilities that we would, you know. And is it possibly that it's a knockoff one where, you know, they cut some corners?
That could be it. But Judy, I'm concerned that maybe do these Hatchimals pick up what they hear in the house? Because if that's the case, I think this particular one was at my house.
Yes, they're not pre-programmed. From what we understand, they're not like Teletubbies that used to swear. They're not pre-programmed with any vocabulary as far as we know. We've had people bring them back to the toy store that I work at, and they'll say they're swearing, but they're not pre-programmed.
They heard it somewhere.
They're picking it up from somebody. That's my understanding. I mean, I'm open to being wrong, but the company tells us that they're not pre-programmed.
So do you take them back when somebody says this thing is hatching at me? Or swearing at me?
Yeah, we do. My company's pretty good about that. We want our customers to be very happy, and we don't want unhappy parents. So, yes, my store does take them back.
Do you program them with positive and uplifting comments from the Hatchimal?
They can't be programmed.
Actually, we put them in the return pile to go back to the company.
And then they all start swearing at each other while they're sitting in the big bin. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, no problem. I thought you guys would enjoy that fact.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year, Judy.
Happy New Year, too. Bye-bye.
All right, so there's also been like a murder case where they're using their Echo Dot.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I thought the Hatchimal was involved.
No, but now maybe there's going to be a Hatchimal up on the stand.
It could be. I mean, it's one of those things where you have to look at it and say, like, I mean, we have these interactive toys and devices, and I'm sure we'll talk about it more in the program, but yeah, pretty soon you're going to have to depose the Hatchimal.
It can't raise a hand, though, to swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
Like a flipper or whatever it's got.
A wing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And social media, obviously there has been issues with social media and fake news, and there are people being mean to each other via social media. We're going to find out how to navigate the world of social media by being nice to one another. We'll talk about that after the news, which is next on 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Wendy Snyder here, along with Dane Neal, who's sitting in for Bill Left today. And Bill's taking some harder days off. He came back for one day. You know how that goes.
Well, what do you do when you gear all up and you do your one day? You give 110%. You know Bill. He's not going to go halfway.
He never gives 110%. No. Come on.
Full speed, full Bill Left speed. And then you just, I guess, a deep breath, right? And then you just, what do you think he's doing today? Watching rerun, like...
Kong Fooey.
Dirty Dragon, Hong Kong Fooey. Right. I'm sure he's got the playlist going.
All right. I was telling you this off the air, Dane. And Steve, you're part of the social media world. We all do Facebook stuff. And Facebook Live to me is very fun. I like doing it. I put it up there. I was watching my son play a blues tune, some slide guitar, and I put just a snippet because I don't want to make people stay for the whole thing. And quite honestly, if they don't want to watch it, they don't have to watch it. So I put it up there just to say, here's what I'm doing. This was a few weeks ago. He had a gig. And, you know, people were complimentary. I wasn't really searching for compliments. I just wanted to say, here's what I'm doing.
Yep.
And some dude wrote something like, oh, my God, he's horrible. I got to be honest with you. He sucks. And I was ready to go, you suck. And my son, who this was about, said, Mom, don't feed the trolls. And I said, that's maybe some good advice. We're going to find out all about that right now with Leslie Shore. Leslie is a communication expert, a professor, and an author. Her book, Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers to Effective Listening, is currently used in 4 universities and in business and nonprofits throughout the U.S. and Canada. Welcome, Leslie. How are you?
I am wonderful, Wendy.
Excellent. So you heard the story where somebody posted a non-complimentary post about my son's performance, and I wanted to delete it. I wanted to say, you're a jerk. And then my son's like, don't feed the trolls. Is that the best way to ignore bad comments on social media?
Absolutely. One of the most important things is not to fan the flame.
Right. It's hard not to do that, though.
Well, it is, especially when you're mom and you love your kid, for sure. But I think one of the most important things for us to realize is that we really need to respond not out of emotion, but out of the critical thinking part of our brain. And sometimes that means that we don't respond at all.
Well, Leslie, one of the things that I think is a little bit unique about the situation is it's kind of, you know, as a parent, it's rare when you're trying to prepare and protect your kids, but they're not situations that you're necessarily used to or that even existed before in the past. You don't have a frame of reference. And I think just as we're all surprised when our 2-year-old can run the iPhone, is this a case where, as Wendy had mentioned, like their kids are going to be a little bit more prepared just by growing up into it to know what sort of the best way to handle things are that maybe we're not, you know, that maybe they're going to be okay when it comes to some of this thing and addressing it?
Oh, absolutely. I think the generational difference, especially when it comes to this technology and the social media platforms that exist, they have grown up with it. I mean, it's a situation where they are more used to communicating through a device than they are face to face. So
isn't that sad when you think about it?
It is.
It'd be great to have both, you know.
Yeah.
There are some skills that they will need to improve on once they get into the working world, and they'll have to do it very quickly, so they'll have to be nimble. But there are some really good things about social media, and there are some really negative things about social media, and I think the point that you brought up, Wendy, about people saying negative things, we have situations where bullies in the old days, when we were growing up, they would say it to your face or they'd make comments to other people and that type of thing. Well, now they have this huge platform and audience to say it to, and it becomes really, really difficult at that point to ignore.
You know, it's weird, and Dane and I were talking about this off the air. I know everybody tells you, don't say something on social media that you wouldn't say to someone's face. But I think the atmosphere has changed considerably where people now say rude things to people's faces as well.
I would agree. I think civil discourse is not very civil anymore. I don't think that this last year politically has helped the situation, because we've had things gotten away with that in our day it would be totally unthinkable for someone to even say, never mind say on television or tweet.
Right.
Well, you brought up the whole social media and the elections. This was another one of those things where we all had really good seats to see something completely change as far as how it works and how it's addressed. And when it came to, and I'm wondering, and what your thoughts are on this too, is, you know, when a president-elect or somebody that's in that position says things, you know, David Axelrod says, you know, when a president speaks, you know, armies march and, you know, markets fall and things like that. But some of the things that President-elect Trump, he's tweeting out, you know, it's sort of, okay, does he really mean it? Who knows? And I don't know that you can put that weight because it is just social media stuff. Do you think that the generation that is out there now that they're seeing that and thinking, oh, it's not that big a deal, it doesn't really matter, or that all of us over time will just tune it out because it's just...
Yeah, it doesn't mean much anymore.
It's just right. Right. What does it really mean? What do you think?
Well, I think there are two points of view on this. Either I can't believe that they're saying that, and you totally ignore it, Or you're saying, he really believes this, and oh boy, are we in trouble. And the third thing is, if a president-elect can say this on Twitter or on Facebook, that just gives me the permission to do something like that myself, and that is what is dangerous.
All right, Leslie Shore is her name. Her book, Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers to Effective Listening, is out there right now. You can go to listentosucceed.com and read the book to find out more about this. However, before we let you go, Leslie, there are 5 tips for proper social media etiquette. Can you share those with us?
I certainly can. First, don't respond to a post or a comment out of emotion. Please take time to process what you have read and reflect on it before commenting out of anger or jealousy or any other kind of emotion, or don't respond at all. Sometimes that's the best move. Second thing is, remember who your friends are. If you have big news like a pregnancy or an engagement, or you got a brand new job that's really awesome, let your families and best friends know in a different way so that they don't find out with everybody else in the world on social media. They're going to get hurt if they are not put in a separate class, so to speak.
Yep.
Third thing is, keep your personal conversations personal.
That is great advice right there.
Yeah, no,
but nobody can. That's what social media is for a lot of people.
You know something? I know that it is, but it feels like they're living their life on social media. They're not actually living their life.
They're not participating in life.
No, and this actually has become an addiction for them.
Quit kissing me, Dane. You got a really bad phone
I'm
here,
sorry.
Leslie. I'm sorry. So, yeah, keep your personal conversations personal. And the last two, we've got a terrible phone line here, so let's wrap this up.
Okay. Stay truly connected to those who matter. The folks that really matter to you, send a birthday card. Pick up the phone and call. Tweeting and texting and all those other things are great, but gee whiz, every once in a while, let them know that they are important to you by using a verbal communication or an actual card that goes through snail mail. And the last thing is, don't brag. No one likes a braggosaurus.
Maybe I should stop posting videos of my son then. Sorry.
You're just being supportive. That's normal.
You can do that once a week, Wendy, but if you do it every other 10 minutes...
I do it once a month. Is that too much?
Okay. You're good.
All right.
You're good. It's when people fill up your social media with their tweets or posts every 10 minutes that it gets cumbersome, it gets bothersome, and those folks will be unliked, unlinked, and unfollowed. So it's a really good idea to pick when and what you are going to post.
I think you should add number 6. Let's go back to posting photos of pets and food. I think that would be
better. Don't brag about your pet, though.
No, just a post with no comment. Leslie, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Listen to Succeed is the name of the book. You can go to listentosucceed.com. Leslie Shore, thank you very much.
It was totally my pleasure, Wendy and Dane.
Thank you so much. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we've got more coming your way. It's Dane Neal sitting in for Bill Left today. Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. You know, I don't even know where to begin. There's just a whole thing going on off the air here.
Well, I think a little bit about and we were talking about it in the last segment, is just the magic. Some of those positive things as far as the social media stuff, there's some positives, some negatives. You can stay in touch. But the Facebook Live thing is pretty amazing. If you would have told the Wendy of 2-3 years ago that you could, in high definition, transport wherever you were to everyone And people use it in what's so great about it is the technology is so easy to use that you can use it for what would be normally. It's not always amazing things. It can be as mundane as like, I'm at the ballgame. We're at the park. Here's my dog.
My Facebook friend and friend in real life, Chris Wood, always posts him sitting in his garage waiting for the Bears game to start. He Facebook lives more than anyone I've ever seen.
So you're saying there should be restrictions.
But no, because you know what? I don't have to watch it, but I don't see him anymore because we live far apart and we don't hang with the same people anymore. So sometimes I kind of like keeping up with what he's doing.
But isn't it amazing that you can do it, that it's that easy? And you know from a broadcast career that it was not always that.
No.
To do something like that would take a film crew and a whole entourage. And now just you with your phone can, you know, great audio and good video, and you can transport it, and everyone in the world can see it. It's pretty amazing.
All right, but here's my question with Facebook Live. We realized yesterday that I'm a lemming. I do what I'm told from employers, and I want to keep with the flow. I don't want to create problems. I obey the laws in the state of Illinois and the world.
Again, I don't see a problem with that. Neither does law enforcement.
No, and I think most people are like that. But the people who are ne'er-do-wells, because it's just fun to say that, wouldn't this make them be on the path to the straight and narrow? Because somebody could Facebook Live something right there. How about that woman who was going off on two people of Hispanic descent in a Walmart or something? Was that Walmart? She was ranting and raving, saying, you know, you have too many items. You cut in line. You're probably on welfare. I'm paying for this, too. It's like, are you kidding me? Somebody caught that on video and posted it, and now, like, does this woman look, maybe she's not on social media, but if I saw myself doing something stupid like that, I would just hate myself.
That is the other side. That's the double edge of that sword, is that you can take so many either mundane or exciting or amazing experiences and share them. And you can also really share, you know, the ugly side of whoever you are, or just if there's a segment of the population. That's what they make it available for everybody. And it is just what it is. But like you mentioned before, you know, you see for a Facebook situation, there's the big line of stuff. I don't get to anywhere near any of it. I think we'll just have to be like pass through the things that don't.
But don't you do that now? If you're looking through and you're swiping like you're on your phone, that's how I mostly look at Facebook. If there's something I don't want to read or look at, then I go past it.
Yep. And that's what you need to do. Or maybe it just opens your eyes, right, wrong, or indifferent, to the fact that there is a lot of, you know, sometimes we're insulated in our own little bubble. We, you know, we do what we do, and we're around the people we're around. But, you know, there's a lot of things to watch out for out there, including people at Walmart that are rude.
And it wasn't Walmart's fault. Walmart was trying to get, I think it was Walmart.
Well, how do you feel about that, Wendy? That whole, you know, the line that's got 10 items or less, and you see the person pull up, and they've got a whole cart full of stuff, and everyone looks at each other like, really? Is this happening? Are they going to do this? And then sometimes you'll have the checker will be like, hey, you can't do that. And then people feel okay about it. I think it's, people are, I guess you're supposed to just kind of police yourself.
Listen, I have gone in the 15 items or less with like 18 items.
I think if you're within a handful of items, but some people completely disregard, you know, and they show with a
full. I know. See that? There should be line security guards that say, I'm sorry, you can't be in this line.
I guess.
It was Walmart, and Walmart is trying to find the two women that this lady ranted and racistly raved about to pay for the groceries and the items that they purchased. And they're also trying to figure out who this Walmart lady is so they can ban her from the stores.
Okay,
there's going to be a picture of her, you know, do not let her in.
Persona non grata.
Yeah, Mr. Greeter, don't greet her.
Well, here you go. And there's the extra, you know, edge to the sword is that there is a little bit of recourse where there wouldn't have been maybe in the past. Everyone would have been kind of polluted by that situation. And now people can kind of work on. I got an idea. This is a think tank here. Here's how you handle the 18 or the 15 item aisle is that, and you make it so it's not anybody's fault and no one has to be heavy handed or mean, is that the register per transaction only goes up to like 18 items. And then it just cuts off and says, I'm sorry. That's all it'll do.
So then that's going to be more problem because then there's going to be extra stuff left in the cart. What do you do with that?
Send them to the proper aisle.
No, then they'll just say, okay, we'll ring this up in two orders. Not saying I've ever done that.
Nope.
But that's another thing, too. You go behind somebody in a grocery line who doesn't have that many items, but they said, you know, I need three separate things. So they ring up like a third of their items, and then this is going to my mom because I'm dropping that off at her house. This is for my great aunt who's sick. Now this is a second order. That takes, that's like three people in front of you instead of one person with a full cart.
They do that? Oh, wow.
Everything.
Okay.
Everybody does everything.
I got to get out there.
All right, quick break. Then we have some news coming up. Dane Neal is kind enough to sit in all day long today for Bill Leff, who worked very hard yesterday, so he needs a few days off to recoup from that one day of high performance. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Dane Neal at 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve. We appreciate it. Happy New Year to you, Steve Bertrand.
Happy New Year. To you.
Say it like you mean it. All right, Dane Neal is sitting in for Bill Leff today. I am Wendy Snyder, and this is WGN Radio. And Dane, I will ask you this now. Did you make any New Year's resolutions?
Yes, and yeah, and I'm not sure if there's an official way to do it. Of course, it's just kind of a hypothetical line in the calendar, that, or kind of the time flow, that there's this place where you can clean the slate, kind of start from scratch, and you can go ahead and decide to either do more of something, do less of something, change something completely, or just make adjustments in your life, hopefully, right, for the better, unless you're a masochist and then you just want to, like, I'd like to hurt myself more. No. Which, of course, no one would agree with. And so that's why, well, my resolution is just the same one that I'll make most years.
What is it?
Just be less fat, I guess, would be good, you know, and don't take up any debilitating habits, you know. So if ever you're inspired by watching Breaking Bad to start a meth lab, don't do it. Don't take up things that that maybe other people have problems with. Don't start gambling. Don't take trips to the boat, you know.
Don't start smoking. That's good.
I mean, these are ones that kind of just avoid the pitfalls of life. But as we were talking about it, and you said sometimes, you know, it's hard to come up with something or think about something or be genuine with what it is, because, you know, it's maybe the same thing that you've done. Is here's an idea for those people that have not made resolutions but have a group of family or friends, is, and Wendy, let me know what you think about this. What about a New Year's intervention where you have your friends and family get together, or they could do it through social media by sending it, is they decide what your resolution should be. Like, you need to do this, you know, and you can.
That would be bad.
Either decide or pick it out of a hat and say, well, I guess I'm going to Vegas. You know, I don't know. I guess I'm going to the Dells. I guess I'm learning to surf.
Well, those are good ones, but like the losing weight thing, which I think is like,
I guess
the top
I need to lose weight.
Yeah, but if somebody tells you that, can I tell you something? When you have a weight problem, you know you have a weight problem. So if somebody says, hey, just don't eat forever, that's not going to work.
Well, we've talked about some of the different and unique programming out there, and there is a program for, there's a show called My 600-Pound Life, and there's people in the show are very, very heavy, where it's difficult to get to do just kind of normal
to
normal things, right? It would probably be obvious to them, but it may not be the thing that they want to hear. But it may be something for their health and for the success of just surviving, that your relatives would say, hey, you know what, let's work on that.
If somebody goes, hey, lose weight, I don't know, I'm rebellious, I'd be like, you lose weight.
Okay, maybe it's anonymous. Maybe it's not like the intervention.
I just think that.
Or maybe it's something positive, Wendy. Maybe it's like, hey, you really need to take those art lessons because you've got talent.
All right, well, see, that's good.
There you go.
See, I think the problem with New Year's resolutions is it's like, this sounds stupid, but it's like too restrictive. Like you say, okay, I'm gonna lose weight, and you start out, and like day one, day two, you're really good, and then you're like, oh man, this is gonna take forever.
Right.
So I am gently doing some things, like I'm trying to add more activity to my life. I'm trying to stop swearing.
See? That's, I don't know why. I mean, other than your vocation, it's not acceptable.
No, but see, that's why I swear more at home. My husband insists this is why this is true. For 30 years, I've been on the radio. For 30 years, I cannot swear on the radio. So I'm able to turn it on and turn it off.
Wow, that's
But then
a
when
skill.
I get home, yeah. I kind of unleash the beast, as my husband has explained to the kids.
Vent in a verbally.
Why does mommy swear so much? Well,
right,
I should write a book.
Because she's not allowed to.
That's true. I hold back.
During the day. But that's kind of scary. I've always, over the years, tried to incorporate as little amount of profanity as I could, just because, you know, if you've had periods in your life where you're swearing more and more, and of course, Wendy, I guess it's all the time, or at least when you're at home, it just kind of is part of your vernacular. It just comes out, and I wouldn't want to take that chance.
You're a smart man, Dane Neal.
I was just, you know.
You really are. There's a professor at Harvard Business School, and she has some suggestions. Actually, there are four common mistakes that people make when they make New Year's resolutions on why they don't succeed.
Oh, this is important because everyone can succeed in making a resolution, but does it actually achieve the desired results? And this is where we need the help.
We do need the help because, seriously, if you go to a health club, notice how the classes are filled or all the machines are taken in January and maybe the first week of February, and then it's back to normal because people give up. And see, I'm an all or nothing kind of girl. I want results like yesterday. And if I don't get results, then maybe you back down. But here, according to Amy Cuddy, this professor at Harvard Business School, there are four common mistakes that people make when they make New Year's resolutions. The first one is they deal with absolutes. People are making absolute statements about what they're going to do, and that's setting them up for failure immediately because they're not always going to go to the gym three times a week. So it's true. I'm going to go to the gym every day. Right there, you're setting yourself up for failure.
You realize it just, and you should realize this before you commit to it, knowing that, you know, once you start kind of failing around the edges, you'll just like, oh, well, it didn't work. It didn't work.
Exactly.
Out.
If you say you're going every day and you can only make it 3 days, 1 week, right there in your mind, you're like, I blew it.
All right, I blew
it. So I'm going to bail. For that example, you may start to religiously work out at a gym, but at some point in the year, there may be a period where the flu keeps you in bed for a week or a few days when you need to set aside your plans for the sake of your job or your family. So on the other hand, it's just as unhelpful to come up with a vague and distant goal, such as I'm going to get a job, because that's just too vague.
A vague and distant, right, because there's no set time when you're going to go ahead and do that. And what is it? You know, it's not specific as far as what it is that you want to achieve. Vague and distant, that sounds like a recipe for failure.
Which one are you, vague or distant?
I've been both a lot of times.
Okay, because I'll be vague today. So don't deal with absolutes. Just if you're going to go to the health club, say, I'm going to be more active this year. Because even if you go once, that's more active than you were last year.
I think you can make some real progress. You mentioned you have the flu for a week and it kind of throws everything off. And then you never quite get back into the flow of things. For this year, like I had actually, I think I lost maybe 20 some odd pounds, 22, 25.
I found them.
Well, they weren't mine because I got my own back. But then it was the Cubs that did it. You know, it was impossible.
You were nervous and couldn't eat during the Cubs.
I was
rain?
Absolutely not nervous. I was celebratory, and there were so many games. If it would have been, Wendy, just the Super Bowl, that's one day I could do it. But the playoffs just went on for months, you know, and I felt the need to not only watch the game but enjoy the game in the way that you traditionally do, with maybe like a beer and
dips,
some snacks and things like
Daps.
That. Right, we're normally up, you know, for the couple months before that. I, you know, it was just, you know, you try not to have any beer after a certain time, or try not to eat, you know, late or whatever. But some of these games went into extra innings, Wendy, and some of them are on the West Coast and started late. And I felt I was obligated to support the team in all those ways that I knew were important to them. And in the end, you know, 2 months later, I had the benefit of being excited about, wow, we won the World Series, we as a collective fan base. But in the end, my whole diet thing was done.
It's funny. You do have to. I look forward to Super Bowl Sunday, not because of the Bears or anything like that. First of all, they'll never be in it. Second of all, I don't really care that
Can
much about
Photoshop
football.
Can we Photoshop the Bears in?
We might have to. But I look forward to the appetizers. I could live my life just having appetizers.
Well, the home gating thing is big. You know, people love doing, you know, getting, you should do that anytime. I mean, you don't have to wait till the Super Bowl to do it, because I think if anything is enjoyable and you can do it, just find other excuses to do it no matter what. Maybe there's a new episode of Wheel of Fortune on, and this is a big one, right? Or they're you know, live from Seattle or something. Boom.
I know. I have to laugh. There are certain items I make every Christmas to bring, like either appetizers, or I make lasagna every year to bring to my sister-in-law's and my brother's house in Peoria. And so my kids are like, why don't you ever make that any other time? Because it's too much work. But now Wheel of Fortune's on. I'm going to do it.
Yeah. If you look for reasons, and sometimes after, let's say after the Cubs were done winning the World Series, I was looking for other things that might be like maybe the NFL season. Hey, it's Sunday. You're looking for those reasons to go ahead and continue the bad behavior on the diet side. But the resolution is there. I've made it. And I'm going to try to work towards, I'll be less vague and distant.
And don't be so absolute.
Yeah, and don't be absolute.
Yeah, don't deal with absolutes. We have more of these. Four ways that you can fail. Four common mistakes when making New Year's resolutions. We'll continue next. It's Dane Neal. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. That's the sad truth, Dane Neal. Nothing changes on New Year's Day. You want it to, but we all kind of put together in our heads, some people write it down on a list or put it in their iPhone notes of the New Year's resolutions they're going to achieve that year. Well, there's a professor from the Harvard Business School. She's a social psychologist, and her name is Amy Cuddy. And she said that there are four common mistakes with New Year's resolutions. We talked about dealing with absolutes. If you say you're going to the gym 5 days a week, if you mess up and can only go 3 days one time, you're going to go, oh, I already blew it, so I'm out. So don't set absolutes. Just say you're going to make it to the gym as much as you can this year.
You have to be realistic and then maybe even be a little conservative about like what it is that you're going to do. That way, hey, if you overachieve a little bit or do what you really were thinking initially, that's gravy, right? You know, you should be pleasantly surprised as opposed to disappointed. It does say like 8% of the people actually do have things work out for them and they achieve
8%.
Yeah, so 92 are with us. You know, we can all kind of collectively feel disappointed in ourselves.
See, then don't set yourself up for failure. Another point, she says, the resolutions are framed by negativity. People tend to focus on things they want to change about themselves and things they dislike about themselves. When you do this, you're kind of eliciting yourself in yourself negative emotions. Some negative emotions are motivating, but for the most part, they're not. If you say, I'm going to stop eating junk food, to use as an example, you're denigrating yourself before you're even starting your resolution. Like you're saying, I eat too much junk food, which I do. So maybe I will try to eat junk food one day less this year, you know, one day less a week.
Or incorporate more vegetables that would take the place of the junk food.
She says you're better off framing your goal as eating healthier, which, see, now that's kind of going against what she says because that is kind of vague, isn't it?
Distant. Yeah.
Distant for us.
you wonder how much of this, you know, you look at it from the advertising standpoint. We talked a little bit about some of those late night infomercials and how they can have kind of all the answers for things. And you look at some of the manufactured holidays and how people capitalize it. We've all seen the Christmas decorations up in June, right?
Because, and now, as soon as Christmas is over, did you notice the Valentine's Day stuff's up already?
And it's not because of their dedication to passion and love. It's about this is a money-making deal. And the retailers are making a ton off of the whole New Year's resolution. All of the fitness retailers, those gyms, you know, they'll offer a special. They can offer a great special that's all throughout the year because they know that you're not going to be there taking up space, you know, past January. And, you know, I mean, I think that's part of it is they're kind of marketing it as, you know, whether it's Weight Watchers, you'll see all of those commercials out there because they know that this is, it's crazy as it sounds. I never really thought about it until this moment, but that's probably, this is their, you know, their Valentine's Day. This is their kind of money-making time when people are in the mood to go ahead and make those decisions to spend those dollars.
All right, so don't frame your New Year's resolution with negativity by saying, you know, I'm a slug. I better work out more. Just go, I'm going to be more active. I'm going to eat healthier. Another item, she says, is resolutions are focused on the outcome and not the process. That is all about me. If you're focused on walking 100 miles and you're just constantly focused on that number, 100 miles, and trying to track your progress, it's going to be kind of demoralizing most of the way because it's going to take you a long time to walk that 100 miles. You're going to feel like a failure for so much of that.
99 of those miles.
Yeah, because the comparison is between where I am now versus where I want to be. So I'm going to walk 100 miles this year. Just say I'm going to walk more. Again, vague and distant. I'm going all for this.
But I think that could kind of work. So the vague and distant can work in a way that if you pick either a goal or an activity that in the end, if you do it, will achieve some of those long-term and unachievable goals. Like I want to lose, you know, 40 pounds. If you say like, hey, I want to walk, but I want to get up and take a walk every day and get out there, walk the dog, you know, go to the park, do whatever you want to do. If you do that consistently, over time, it's going to lead to those other results, but you're not putting the big pressure of the giant thing on it. What do they say? The longest journey starts with one step.
It's true. And, you know, psychologists will tell you, my son Dylan is in eighth grade and Dr. John Duffy comes on our show frequently and he's Dylan's therapist. And it's like, you know, I'm going to bring him up to an A. Don't say that because already you're not going to do that probably.
I'll try to study for each test and I'll try to get all my homework done.
Exactly. That's a great way of doing it. So we were talking about if you want to stop eating junk food, don't frame your resolution with negativity. Just say you're going to eat healthier. Kevin, you have an idea for us?
Yeah, a lot of people say they're going to stop eating junk food because they hate their body. But the way to do it is don't stop eating unhealthy foods because you hate your body. Stop them because you love your body too much to put them in it in the first place. It just changes the whole emotion behind it.
It really does do that. I'm not very positive. That should be another resolution. That should be more positive this year. Just a little bit more.
You do that with exercise, too. You know, don't start exercising because you hate your body. Start exercising because you love your body.
And because you care about it and want it to be your vessel.
Your temple.
It's a simple distinction, but it's huge.
Awesome. Thank you, Kevin. Happy New Year.
I think what you're saying, Wendy, is that as those Valentine's decorations and promotions are out there, we should buy our body a Valentine's Day card.
How about candy instead?
Yeah, right. Let's look at it because you love it.
I want to treat myself. I'm going to buy myself one of those chocolate hearts.
I deserve it. I've been good to me.
Well, look at Bill F. He was good to himself for one day, and then he's like, that's it. I got to take another week off.
Is he still doing the remember, he does like a whole, is it a month or 60 days or night? I don't know how long
he does it twice a year where he gives up all sugar for, is it 60 days, Kevin? Because he's really cranky.
Yeah, I think like leading up to his birthday typically, yeah, he just cuts it out. Even through Halloween, I believe, which is really...
Yeah, he starts like the day before Halloween or something. I don't know. It's a weird thing that he does, but he says he feels better. And I said, well, why don't you do it all the time? He goes, I can't do that all the time.
Yeah, he still enjoys all those sugary treats. Plus, he's an aficionado of the historical significance of sugary treats. You know, he's the one that knows, you know, the history of the Pez dispensers.
But what can I tell you? What is the funniest part? And Kevin, you can attest to this. When he gives up sugar for those 60 days, and then he has it like the first day back, it's like he's drunk on sugar.
That's a fun show.
Oh my God, it is a blast. It is so fun. But here's my thought on this. And again, do what works for you because everybody's different. He's really strict during that time and does not have any added sugar and tries no potato chips.
And I have brought in some amazing treats.
Yeah.
And he's able to say, I can't do it, not going to do it.
But see now what works for people. He feels good doing that in two solid chunks throughout the year. My opinion would be like, well, why don't you just all things in moderation? Like, you know, don't be like a sugar junkie the whole year. And he says it's for him, it's hard. It's like give it up completely because he can't trust himself to do like, you know, let's limit it once a week.
Plus, there's got to be some sort of healthy or positive residue from doing what is a really extensive cleanse of one thing, right? And it's got to be all out of you at that point, as opposed to just kind of the building blocks of unhealthiness, which is kind of where I'm going.
We're in the same car right now. And finally, the fourth thing of why your resolutions fail, resolutions are reliant on outside forces. It's a bad idea to incorporate other people and moments of luck into your goal setting. If you're going for a promotion at work, you'll be doing yourself a favor by focusing on steps along the way related to your performance. But starting off with the idea that you're a failure if you don't get this position disregards plenty of factors beyond your control.
And if you're going to depend on Larry to be your ride to the gym three of those days a week, and Larry has got car trouble all the time,
yeah.
Boom, he's your Larry. I thought you were going to the gym today, honey. Oh, Larry's car's broke down. I guess we'll be watching Newzoo Review again.
Coming right at you. All right, we have to take a quick break, and then it's news time with Ryan Burrow, who I know I introduced at 10 o'clock this morning, but he really will be coming up next. It's 720 WGN. Thank you, Ryan. It's Wendy Snyder here. Bill Leff is off for a couple of days. Dane Neal is sitting in his chair today.
It's comfortable. No, it just feels good. It feels good, but only in, you know, the way that you'd, I don't know. I'm just keeping it warm for
Yeah, that's
for
what you got to do. All right. It is, we do Tech Tuesday on this show a lot, but we're doing Tech Week because the Consumer Electronics Show, I believe, opens today. Yesterday we got a preview, and today we have Apt sales rep Carl Prouty, who is live from the CES right now. How are you, Carl?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thanks, Wendy. How are you doing?
Awesome. Now, we talked to, I believe, John Apt yesterday to give us a little preview. Apt Electronics, is it aptelectronics.com? Is that the website you can go to? Because are you going to be doing some live streaming or video?
We have a YouTube page set up, so we're going to be uploading videos all throughout the day. Not so much today until later this evening, because the show doesn't really start until tomorrow full time.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to have some stuff up kind of throughout the day that we didn't post last night, and then we'll have more videos up tonight. But yeah, you can check us out on YouTube, and then that website is apt.com.
Apt.com, perfect. Mm-hmm. All right, so it hasn't opened yet, but you're getting some ideas of what you might be seeing. What's going to excite you? What's the first booth you're going to run to?
So we went to CES Unveiled last night, so they had a lot of smaller companies, and some big guys were there too. The first thing that really kind of stuck out were the drones. These things they're just super popular. They're not going anywhere. So you're going to see a ton of them coming out. There was a company called GDU that made this really reasonably priced kind of folding, and they called it a modular drone. So a lot of times when you buy a drone, you're stuck with the camera that comes with it. This one, you can actually take the camera off, and you can actually put your own cameras on up to about 5 pounds. So that was really cool.
All right, who uses a drone? Now, correct me if I'm wrong here. Someone, maybe a photographer, maybe news services, but just your average Joe, do you want a drone?
I think a peeping Tom would want one.
I guess. Carl, who's like the target audience or target demographic for a drone?
You know, honestly, everybody. My son, who's 9 years old, got 4 drones for Christmas, 4 different drones, little tiny ones. He got a big one with a camera built in. So, I mean, they're really for everybody. Photographers use them. A lot of videographers use them. So they're really, there's so much stuff that's integrated into them now that they're good for everyone.
When you kind of mentioned photographers, and if you're looking at the way they make movies now, they're able to get just amazing shots you could never get before. And they are really cool. You're looking at some applications, though, they're going to get built into kind of the business world. And there was, I think, Amazon, it was last week, I think, they had a patent for their new fulfillment, their floating fulfillment center.
Oh, yeah.
That would have drones flying out and delivering things. Like is that going to be something that, I mean, we see it now where they're able to bring medication up to mountainside, you know, accident victims that you couldn't necessarily get to by the road. But are we going to see it where, you know, the pizza guy is going to show up? It's not a pizza guy, it's a drone.
Hopefully, actually, that'd be kind of cool, because maybe then you don't have to leave a tip. It costs you a little bit less for the pizza.
I like that idea. Actually, I'm married to a Star Wars fan. Jimmy Mack loves Star Wars so much. And we were at Toys R Us over the Christmas break, and they have a Millennium Falcon drone. It's really pretty cool. And then I'm thinking, you know, I grew up in Brookfield, and there's a quarry there that I always wondered what it looked like. Is that something like I could use a drone for, to fly over there and see what it looks like in there?
Potentially. There's a lot of rules that they have in place, so you have to make sure you're outside of a certain range of distance from airports and things like that. But there's also applications you can download onto your phone that tell you, like, you put in where you are, and it'll tell you whether you're okay to fly your drone there. So there's a lot of cool stuff in place to be able to tell you whether or not you can actually fly your drone where you are.
On the legislative side and the judicial side, yeah, they're going to have to figure that stuff out. Those kind of things are always lagging behind the advancements of technology. Whether, let's say, if there's a drone over your house, if you're allowed to go ahead and shoot it down because it's invading your space, that's one of the things that they're thinking about. Or if, let's say, your drone's flying over and it's over an accident scene, or if it's over a murder scene or something. I mean, there's so many of these are out there. You're going to capture things, and who has access or rights to that footage? I mean, that's one of the things I think we'll look at too.
All right, and
that's definitely
gonna play in. TVs, when we talked to John yesterday, the TVs are all the rage, 4K, 5K, 100K. What are we going to be seeing at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas?
Well, hopefully there's rumors that Sony's going to have a couple of new TVs here for us to look at. We're actually going to meet with them later on today, so we should have more stuff on that this evening. So, you know, stay tuned to our YouTube channel for that stuff. Yeah, the TVs are they're just out of control. They just keep getting better and better. Picture quality is just crazy now. It's like looking out your window. So hopefully we'll be able to see some really cool stuff from them tonight.
Maybe it's our phone that's messing up today. We had a guest on earlier, and we're getting
the same
like,
sort of squeaky phone connection. Wendy had mentioned, you know, which booth are you going to be excited to run towards first? And looking at some of the things on the list here, this one's, you know, I'm excited. Wendy, if you remember the first car that you ever had that had heated seats, wow, it was something special. The Digisole has connected shoes. Some are self-lacing. I don't need that. I can do it myself. Some have heated insoles, and some have a high heel toe that you can raise and lower the height from your app. So these are some pretty cool shoes. Heated shoes, do we need that?
In the winter, you know, at a Bears game.
Chicago? Yeah, I heard your weather right before I came on, and I think those would probably come in handy.
And think about women who always bring a spare pair of shoes because they wear heels to the office, and then they have to put on gym shoes to get to the train. Imagine going on an app and going, you know, lower my heel, and then right? You can strut your stuff.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. My wife is 4'7", so she would get some good use out of that. I think she'd be able to raise up a little bit.
Too bad Prince wasn't still alive because he wore heels higher than most women did. He could use this.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like pretty cool things. And I know that there are connected devices are really popular as well. Fossil brand, they have new watches that look like regular watches. And what are they, more like a Fitbit kind of thing?
No, not really. It's just like buying a regular watch. They just have a traditional styled watch face. So for people that don't like wearing one of the other connected watches that has a digital face on it, this is just a regular analog looking watch. And then it's going to have some buttons on it that you can set it up to. You can set it up to be a hot button. So the girl that we were talking to last night, for example, had one of them set up to take a picture when she pressed it. So she could have her phone set up in one spot, push a button on her watch, and then the phone would take a picture. So that was a cool feature. And then it'll tell you if you get a text, or it'll tell you if you get an email. So there's a lot of cool functionality built into them.
You know, all I'm saying is everybody better behave themselves this year, because there are cameras where you don't think there are cameras. So act well and dress nicely.
Sure.
Good tips. All right. So what is the Apt YouTube channel? Just go to YouTube and search Apt.
Yeah, you can go to YouTube and look up Apt Electronics, and we should pop right up. We put a bunch of stuff up last night. We're going to do some extra videos here throughout the day, and then tonight you should see a bunch more come out.
Okay, so that's Apt Electronics if you're on the YouTube channel, ABT, and you can also go to apt.com or go to their store it's Glenview?
In Glenview. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I know where it is. I pass it all the time when I'm going to my in-laws when it's on the 294, but I didn't realize that was Glenview.
It's a destination.
It is, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Are we talking to you tomorrow, Carl?
Yeah, we'll be talking tomorrow as well.
All right, perfect. I didn't know, because when we talked to John yesterday, I thought we were going to talk to him all week, and he said, nope, you'll be talking to Carl Prouty. So we've got you all week, and keep us posted on all the cool things at the CES.
Will do.
Thank you so much. All right, we are going to take a break. It's Dane Neal sitting in for Bill Left today, and it's me, Wendy Snyder, on 720 WGN.
Kids, it ain't big, it ain't pretty, but I love eggs.
Did you know eggs are a good, inexpensive source of high-quality protein?
All right, this is a very bad copy of it, but remember the incredible edible egg.
One of the most amazing ad campaigns out there, of course, the Big Egg Lobby. You know, that was some of their best work, you know, and it's one of those items that's out there that isn't there kind of a pendulum on, okay, there's a study comes out, well, eggs are terrible for you, or there's high cholesterol. Then it goes back like, oh, eggs are good, you know, as kind of the competing interest. But
every day,
eggs are here to stay.
I love eggs. Do you like eggs?
I do. Some people are weirded out by them.
Yeah, Bill doesn't like eggs very much.
Yep.
Kevin, do you like eggs?
Oh, yeah, big time.
They are a great source of protein. I love a good hard-boiled egg, but it's a pain in the ass to hard-boil them. So now they actually sell some eggs that are already deshelled and hard-boiled, which are really good, but you pay for the convenience. But now your wife, which is weird, I don't have to say fiance anymore.
That's right, yeah.
Your wife likes hard-boiled eggs and was doing a little experiment unbeknownst to her.
Was it an experiment, or was she just trying to eat the egg?
Well, okay, so we actually have a hard-boiled egg maker, which I know you can just use a pot of water, but this thing is the greatest thing ever.
Oh,
you just
good.
Stack
you
them in there and...
What? Really?
Yeah, we got it for, it was like a wedding gift, but it's, you stack your eggs in there, there's little slots for them, and you poke holes in the top, and then you just push the button, and it goes, and they're done in 20 minutes, if that.
See, that's a long time, though.
We've got one that actually, right, it'll take and it'll cook your egg, you put it in a little slot, and it'll cook it inside of a couple minutes. You don't need a frying pan or any of those things. So,
yeah, but not a hard-boiled.
It'll do it. Yeah, it'll absolutely hurt.
Because on one of those infomercials, there's a little thing you put in there, and it's like a piece of wire, and it whips it around so it scrambles it within the shell.
Is that the
instant
lobotomy device?
Yes. But, all right, so first of all, I have to write a note to sell for New Year's resolution. What's it called, Kevin? An egg, hard-boiled egg maker?
Yeah, just hard-boiled egg maker or machine.
I'm pretty sure it has a better name than that.
I hope so. Excellent. Right. All right. So Sarah had a hard-boiled egg that she got out of her machine, but it was cold, right?
Yeah. So she likes hers right out of the machine, so they're nice and hot. But this one, we had put them in the fridge already, and she goes to make one for like a late-night snack. So she takes it out of the shell, and you know, and normally when she does this, she'll cut them in half and then microwave them for like a minute and then, you know, do the salt and pepper or whatever else. But this time she didn't cut it in half. So she microwaves it for a minute, just whole, no shell. But whole still, and then she goes to take a bite, and I was in the room with her, and I heard like it sounded like a balloon popping. I've never seen anything like this. Chunks of egg just went flying. It was like a little bomb. It blew up.
So as she was biting into it and broke the seal,
yeah, like the pressure.
Did it burn her?
Yep, it got her on the lip and the cheek a little bit, and I mean she's lucky. It could have gotten her like in the eye or something like that. But everybody I talked to about this has no idea that this can happen. I had no idea.
Is it possible? Because, you know, eggs are natural things, just like people are natural. You know, we're not all identical.
That's genius, Dane.
This was some
people
kind
are
of,
natural, not in L.A. But.
Well, I mean, we're not made in an assembly line, although it's out of the machine. Is it possible this was like a rogue egg, some kind of, you know.
A rogue egg. I like that. No, we ended up looking up online, and there's like videos of people doing this. This is a common thing. It happens.
I found out why it happens, because I never knew this. If I get hard-boiled eggs, I'll just eat them cold. I didn't even think to microwave
them.
That's
how I do it too, yeah.
I know, but they are really good when they're really warm. And you know what's really good to put on them? Lemon pepper. That's really good. I don't know why, but
hot
it
sauce.
Is. You put hot sauce.
Of course.
You put hot sauce on your finger. All right, well, we're doing a little public service announcement because I know we're going into the lunch break and people might have a hard-boiled egg that they want.
Locked and loaded.
Yeah. And before you microwave it, here's what's going on. Microwaves heat by vibrating water molecules. Even hard-boiled eggs have sufficient moisture for the moisture to heat up to steam. The shell keeps the steam inside until pressure builds up sufficiently to overcome the shell. And then the shell cracks and the steam is let out very fast in the process is exploding the egg. But without the shell, it's still
contained in some way, right?
So without the shell, there is some moisture inside that egg because, you know, when you break the shell and roll it, it's kind of dewy. You know what I mean? There still is definitely some moisture. So when it heats the moisture molecules and then you're breaking the seal of the egg, it completely explodes. So I think this is a helpful tip to anyone who might be ready to microwave a hard-boiled egg.
So your advice would be, Kevin, it would be goggles or the full Hurt Locker suit?
Yeah, like I'm picturing, like a hazmat suit kind of even.
So you saw videos of it?
Yeah, if you like YouTube it, there's people that doing it on purpose, like biting into a microwave to boil egg. I don't know why you would do that.
Well, they're so known and appreciated in their kind of cold version that I don't know that a lot of people are eating them hot like that. So
well, now I want to do it. I want a hard-boiled egg maker and I want a microwave.
No,
them,
you
but,
don't.
But save now we got to find out there, like. When she cut them in half, it didn't happen, though, right?
Yeah, I think because that's like, in my mind, the pressure is building in the yolk area, and
that's
then the white is trapping it all in.
That
so
is.
Once you cut it in half, you're kind of releasing that pressure.
That's it. And when you bite it, your tooth goes in, it's like,
it's just
kapow.
Like exactly.
And they said according to Yahoo News, they say the same kind of situation as if you shake up a soda can and then open it up. You know, that's what's going on. It's all the pressure built up, and then your tooth pokes a hole in the white yolk, or in the white.
Right.
And kablammy.
Watch out.
So be careful out there if you're having a hard-boiled egg.
Protective eyewear at all times.
Yes.
That would be really funny. Sarah, why are you wearing goggles? Just having my egg, my daily egg.
Safety first.
All right. It is time now for the Bill and Wendy Firehouse Subs lunch break. I'm sorry. Sorry, it's not the Dane and Wendy. You know, you don't get in on this.
It's okay.
We keep Bill alive through a sandwich. You can win a Firehouse Subs gift card right now. Be the 13th caller, 312-981-7200. And if you visit a Firehouse Subs, just ask for the Bill and Wendy special. You'll get the hook and ladder, under 500 calories, stacked with smoked turkey, turkey breast, I guess I should say, Virginia honey ham, honey, Monterey Jack cheese, lettuce, tomato, mayo, and deli mustard for only $4.99. You can find a Firehouse Sub near you at firehousesubs.com. Firehouse Subs, founded by firemen. They also have fantastic salads, which I had yesterday. I had the Firehouse salad with turkey, and it was to die for. God, I have never said that. That's my little tribute to Zsa Zsa Gabor. So Firehouse gift card, Firehouse Subs gift card right now. Caller 13, 312-981-7200. Is today Wednesday? See, I'm so sad now because before Prince died, Dane Neal in for Bill Leff, and I'm Wendy Snyder. Thank you, Ryan. Before Prince died, just for a goof, we started doing Prince Spaghetti Day around here, and Kevin would do a Prince song to rejoin, and now I'm sad about it.
Well, the song that was chosen was the Prince I Would Die For You song, and this is a guy that followed through. On a little too soon, I guess, but I'm just saying
it's not too soon. It's just bad.
I know, it's terrible. I think I'm just in the confused throes of all that we've lost and everyone in 2016. And maybe it's because I'm sleep deprived. I'm not sure. I think we talked about some of the infomercials I've watched. You haven't. I've been exposed to a lot of terrible television because of my lack of sleep.
Do you have trouble sleeping?
Well, I don't have trouble sleep. I'll fall asleep and then I wake up a bunch of times.
Me too.
And I know it's
called anxiety.
Do we need to get Mike Lindell back on the phone here? Is that what you guys are getting at?
I know there are people happy and sad because I'm seeing the texts that are coming through after Bertrand's Wintrust business lunch with Mike Lindell. I love my MyPillow. I swear to God, it has changed my life. I don't wake up with a stiff neck anymore, and it help me get to sleep, but it's more than a pillow that's going to make you sleep well.
Well, and I know that sleeping is important, you know, much like, water intake and oxygen, obviously.
More important than you think.
More important than you think.
You gain weight when you don't get enough sleep.
And you feel a little bit better. You're not
drowsy driving is worse than drunk driving.
Yeah, so this is the need for and the importance of sleep. But yeah, so I'll fall asleep, but then I wake up and I'm one of those gotta fall asleep with the TV.
Oh, thing. You need background ambient
some
noise?
Some kind of noise, and sometimes I won't. Here's the weird thing about it is that I'll incorporate. I had CNN on last night, and so
that'll put you
a lot
to
of
sleep.
My yeah, it was terrible. A lot of my dreams were. I was in these very tense political meetings.
Was there a scroll on the bottom of your dream, too?
No, I was in there, but it was something about healthcare. And, so, you know, it was just, and I was dreaming it. And then you kind of wake up because that's annoying. And then you kind of switch the channel. And then you'll end up with, one of those, Dateline ID 2020 kind of murder mysteries. And well, those are always disturbing. You'll fall asleep to that. And you've got to.
Don't have the TV on.
I got to find. I can't have the complete silence because then I hear the other things. I don't know what it is. You know, there's some
white noise machine.
Yeah, it's like a little worth. Or you have those. I think your phone could probably, play Babbling Brook. Right. Or some of those things that you have at the massage or the spa. Right. Where they play the kind of soft, whatever.
What you're talking about. My acupuncturist would put that music on. And in that hour session, I sleep more soundly than I do at home. I do.
Right. So you know that there are things that you can do that can kind of put you to sleep as soon as possible instead of just kind of that overall kind of lull you to sleep. Some kind of a magical thing that you can do. For me, also, if I play solitaire, on the video.
Mine is Candy Crush. I fall asleep sometimes with the iPad on me.
It'll put me to sleep when I do that. Or, counting sheep. I mean, these are the traditional things.
Okay. But what you're explaining, the frequency of waking up, such as myself, the having to play solitaire or another game to get your mind off of the other stuff, it's stress and anxiety that is waking you up.
You could be right, Wendy.
I mean, I wake up freaking out going, oh, did I oversleep? And then it's like, oh, it's 2:30 in the morning. Wow, I get another 4 hours of sleep. Go back to bed. But then I'll wake up in 2 hours going, did I sleep through my alarm? So that's anxiety. But falling asleep, I don't know. If you're an insomniac, like evidently Dane and I have trouble with, there is a guaranteed way to help you sleep.
I'm all ears, all sleepy ears.
Here's what I've got for you, Dane. According to Huffington Post, where I found this article, there is a song that can help you sleep. One song. It's by a UK band called Marconi Union, which in my personal opinion, I think this is just a story done by Marconi Union's press people.
Yeah, but what would, if you're a musician out there, I mean, granted, it's good to have an audience, but if your audience is asleep,
I guess,
you know,
well, you can't see them live.
No one awake for the B-side.
It's called Weightless, and it was crafted to serve as a possible solution to insomnia. It's helped thousands of listeners since its 2011 release. The British Academy of Sound Therapy assisted Marconi Union in writing this song with special consideration toward sounds that would help soothe sleepy listeners. It's Weightless includes a heartbeat-like rhythm, calming melodies, and the incorporation of gentle chimes. Right there, I think this is what you've been looking for. When all those elements come together, they provide a world-class experience in relaxation.
You've got to figure, whoever is out there making the, you know, the spa soundtracks, you know, where they're putting the hot stones, you know, the cucumbers on the eyes or whatever they do, you know, there's got to be some kind of band that makes, you know, that kind of music. And there's got to be some science to it too, right? Where remember when movie soundtrack people, you know, they're not having a marching band in the sad, you know, sentimental scenes. They have ways. Remember, you hear the music and all of a sudden you feel like, I think I'm going to lose it.
Right.
Right?
You know, or the sad Brady Bunch movie or music. Wah, 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 wah. I mean, right. It was very slow.
Yeah, and I think it's designed, orchestrated, if you will, to elicit some kind of response, and I guess sleeping would be the same.
All right, we're going to hear the song in a minute. We're going to take a break. I want to tell you a few more things. And then please, if you're driving, pull over. If you're trying to be productive, if that was your New Year's resolution, don't listen to this at work. The song, again, is called Weightless. It's by the UK band Marconi Union. And, Dane, they're claiming this is, quote, the most relaxing song in the world.
Okay. We should probably do it maybe like 5 till 3. No, I'm just kidding. I want to hear it. 312-981-7200. Maybe if any of the listeners have things that they do, like either tricks or tips or things that they do that they've done to help themselves.
Yeah, we'll honor all. But many scientists agree with the claim that this is the most relaxing song in the world. A new study even found that the song, they put the jam. I don't think this is qualified. You can't qualify this as a jam.
You're asleep.
Reduced the overall anxiety of female listeners by 65%. So I don't know if it's going to work for men as well. The study involved a very small sample size, so the results are worth taking with a grain of salt. But the finding is still pretty interesting. This song has been reported to slow listeners' pulses, make them feel as if they're in something of a pleasant trance. Take me to your leader. Weightless also does a great job in reducing anxiety. In fact, it's the very first song on, according to this author, on his playlist, or her, Claire Hannum. This was originally published in the magazine Self, which I like to read. It's right. A great magazine. Let's take a break. If you're driving, pull over. If you're operating heavy machinery, what are all the little things that if you're taking medication, do not operate a motor vehicle, do not operate heavy
machinery. Don't ride roller coasters. Right. Any pregnant women?
All right, it's Dane Neal in for Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and we're coming back with the world's most relaxing song ever right here on 720 WGN. How are you feeling?
I don't know, a little tingly, right?
It's Wendy Snyder here along with Dane Neal. Bill Leff is on vacation. Yeah, just keep it playing because we can talk over this. This is a song called Weightless by the UK band Marconi Union.
I wonder if, did they set out...
Yes.
Okay, so this was like,
do
let's put people
to
sleep.
What I say?
No, I know they worked together with someone else.
With the British Academy of Sound, they assisted Marconi Union in writing this song with special consideration towards sounds that would help soothe sleepy listeners. You are getting very sleepy.
Yeah, you got to
I'm
do
Delilah.
A little bit of that, right?
Would you like to hear a love hit? Weightless is the name of this song, sometimes referred to as the most relaxing song in the world. Many scientists agree with this claim. It does a great job in reducing anxiety. I do feel cleansed.
9 million people. can't be wrong.
Right. Song has over 8.7 million plays on Spotify, which in the grand scheme of things is 8.7 million that much these days.
Well, considering this, that each and every person that played it fell asleep and did not replay it, that means it's a legitimate 8.7.
This is very pretty and relaxing. Boom.
It seems like not a lot is going on with all that collaboration and the research. It seems, now I feel like it's working on me a little bit.
I do feel more relaxed.
Don't you? I mean,
I hate to say that, although I am so highly suggestible that really.
Like, so if I say, you are relaxed.
I am.
Eyes are getting very heavy. Yeah, it's
it's very soothing. There are wind chimes.
This is like, you know, massage music.
Yeah. So will you try this tonight, maybe?
Sure. Would I be 8.7.1? I'd be that guy. So I'd have to download. I think I have Spotify on the phone. We'll do this. It would work.
I really feel very relaxed. Weightless by the UK band Marconi Union. They did this intentionally to try and help you. I feel like I'm getting very
relaxed. Feel like you need to speak along something that is compatible with the music.
This is how I used to feel when I used to listen to WNUA. Smooth jazz. Because it is kind of jazzy. Isn't it like slowed down jazz? Kevin, you're the musician.
I don't know. It's, you know, ambient electronic music. It's good.
When the boys were little, they're 14 and 17, I always had a white noise machine in the room because I thought, we have an old creaky house and I didn't want to wake them. Once a baby falls asleep, you don't want them to wake up.
You don't.
So you mask the sounds, which you were talking about.
Yeah, it's like it just makes us a static noise, kind of, right? The white noise machine.
Yeah.
It's like a you know, just kind of that.
Now, with you doing that and with this song on, I swear to God, I'm going to fall asleep.
You know, I hate to, I don't know if it's because it's just, there's been.
Listeners,
all this,
are you feeling more relaxed after listening to this? 312-981-7200. I'm just curious.
It's kind of suggestive. I really do feel a little relaxed. Maybe too relaxed. Yeah, take a deep breath.
It could be the post lunch thing catching up to us, too.
Yeah, that's
yoga,
true.
But yeah, maybe. The question is, and I think so many people closing in on 9 million as far as people being helped. But if you're a band, should you aspire to do music like this, I guess, for the common good, doing the people's work? Or is it the kind of thing that it's too relaxing? You know, people are going to be too relaxed to even, you know, put their credit card in and purchase your music.
Well, it's good if you're getting the plays on Spotify, but then I don't think people would exactly want to come and see you perform this live.
So you're falling asleep while you're
Now, Kevin, what would that band look like? There'd be some comfortable chairs.
Everybody would be laying down. In a,
no shoes. Carpeting.
What are those psychiatrist couches called? What are they? You
a
know?
Couch?
Yeah, but it's got
a
like
chaise lounge.
The chaise lounge. Isn't that a thing?
Oui, mon ami. All right. Now I feel drunk.
It's the music.
Somebody's saying, will you guys shut up so we can fall asleep?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Sounds like the music at the planetarium. Make it stop. Can't hear it over your talking. Sorry, we should talk like this. Maybe if you would shut up, we could hear it.
These are all valid.
Very
valid
interesting.
Points.
I just fell asleep behind the wheel. No, don't do it. The sound of my voice should jar you awake. What else do we have? I'm yawning and my legs feel relaxed. What is this, from a dog? What else do we have? Someone fell asleep while listening to it. There are 6 parts to this, by the way. Weightless Part 6 should be experiencing a spacewalk on Earth. You said on their website.
Yeah, on the Spotify page, there are 6 parts. I'm wondering, could you like...
And Kevin, do they ease you? Is one part where they ease you in? And in the end, is it kind of a, and we're awake, and then you come out of it.
That'd be good
planning.
Ready
to go.
I don't know if it's that in depth. Could there be like a weightless cover band? or karaoke? I guess that wouldn't work without lyrics.
I like the karaoke idea.
It would just be hum.
You know, guys, we're talking over it because we don't want you to fall asleep. That's not good for radio listeners to a radio show. And you can get it yourself. This is Marconi Union. Macaroni Grill, I almost said. Marconi Union, and it's called Weightless.
Do they do the endless breadsticks there?
No, that's the other one. Oh, Olive Garden. Yeah. Like family. Yeah, most people are enjoying this. It's better than a white noise machine. Make it stop.
To me, it's good because there's not like any or very many distinguishable parts. Because if I'm trying to fall asleep and there's like distinguishable noises I can like just focus on, I'm not going to ever fall asleep. I'll just focus on that.
I wonder if the musicians fell asleep while recording it.
Somebody's head's resting on the keys.
Hey, Larry's asleep again. Here's the chimes.
All right, well, you feel free to download it yourself. It is Scientists Agree, and the band Marconi Union worked together with the British Academy of Sound Therapy to reduce anxiety, help people fall asleep. It's been reported to slow listeners' pulses and make them feel as if they're in something of a pleasant trance.
I feel like that.
Don't make me do something I wouldn't do while I wasn't in the trance, Dane.
Nope.
Please.
Yeah, just everybody... Just enjoy.
So next time you're trying to drift off to sleep, people, close your eyes. Press play on Weightless by the band Marconi Union. You can find it on Spotify or their website. This is very pleasing to the ear.
It is. I am really going to do this.
It's like we're drugged.
I'm going to turn a little bit, right? I'm going to turn down the volume on the either the you know, the true crime mystery, the infomercial, or CNN. So it'll still be there visually. Of course, my eyes will be closed, but I'll know that if I look up that they're there, and then I'm going to use this as the music. I'm not sure how it'll work, but I'm going to try it. I'm actually going to try it.
It sounds outer spatial. Maybe the Martians actually recorded this.
The Martians.
And quite honestly, us talking over it, it's the same thing. Isn't it kind of the same thing? Oh, that's a little different. I still wouldn't call it a jam.
And it's over.
Well, they just ruined it by having it end cold like that.
That's what I was thinking. They need to kind of just ease you back into the living and wakeful world.
All right. Well, Adam Hoge will wake us all up because there was a Bears, what was it, an end-of-season press conference? Is that what happened today? I know some news reports have come out already. I know Ryan did some in the news because Adam recorded some things, but we're going to talk to him.
The Bears actually lost that postseason news conference.
I feel so relaxed. Were you listening to that Weightless song, Steve, at all? It's supposed to be the most relaxing song in the world.
I missed it. I was eating.
Play-Doh.
If you missed any of that, you can always check out the full show podcast at WGNradio.com. It's Wendy Snyder. It is Dane Neal in for Bill Leff. And we're here on 720 WGN. Kevin, you just threw this together. Kevin Richter, ladies and gentlemen, kudos to you because this is the best Bears introduction ever. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Dane Neal, who is in for Bill Leff today. And Adam Hoge is on the line reporting from the Bears. What was it? A press conference that went on earlier?
Hey, guys. Yeah. Nice job, Kevin. That was good.
Wasn't that fantastic?
Yeah, this is the annual kind of goodbye press conference at House Hall where the general manager, head coach, if they're still employed, which they are this year, address the media. And then we did hear from George McCaskey, the Bears chairman, today too, which was a pleasant treat as well. So we at least got their reaction to what was a dismal 3-13 season.
All right. So many questions. I know this happened at 11 o'clock this morning, so some people have gotten the news. But the first thing I think everyone thought of when this this goodbye conference was happening, what's going to happen with John Fox and what's going to happen with Jay Cutler? Nothing happened.
Nothing happened yet. Let's start with John Fox. The decisions coming down from both the general manager, Ryan Pace, and above him with his organization is that they are going to stay the course. They think, at least with the main players here, that there is progress being made with the roster, albeit slow progress, that they, and George McCaskey talked about this with us too, he really likes what Ryan Pace has done so far, and he thinks that John Fox is the right guy to coach up the players that Ryan's bringing in. I think the mistake that maybe these guys have made over the last couple of years is not being more open about the fact that this is a huge rebuilding effort that they are undergoing. Maybe they didn't realize how big it was when they first signed up for this, but it's obviously turned into that, and they were not as open and honest about it as maybe Theo Epstein was with the Cubs and where everyone kind of knew that, hey, this team's going to be bad for a few years before they get a lot better. And I think they were more open about that today, at least. Well, and they said that, hey, this is going to take some time. I guess the bright side of being 3-13 is it gives you a good draft pick. They're going to get an opportunity in a couple weeks at the Senior Bowl to coach up a lot of these prospects that a lot of other teams don't have that advantage. So they're here. They have a ton of cap space. They're top five in the NFL in cap space. So they have a lot of opportunities this offseason to improve the roster.
You know, and I wanted to ask you, too, and I think here, seeing what's happened with the Cubs, it kind of does allow everybody to have that. It's not an excuse, but that plan.
Thank God there was the Cubs.
Well, the White Sox, you know, that's what they said. Okay, we're going to do that. You know, that worked out all right. Even though it's not as easy as just deciding you're going to be bad and rebuild, it doesn't always lead to success. But I'm wondering, like, on the Bears side, you know, if and for someone that covers it on a regular basis, everybody goes through injuries and all that stuff. Did you see as the team got, you know, kind of worse, you know, where it's a week after week of excuses and disappointment, that, and we saw it with the last regime here, is that does John Fox still have the locker room? Does he still have the support of the players? He has the resume, obviously. He's done some great things in other places. But did you see throughout the course of the season any kind of loss of the players' confidence in him?
No, and I think that that's a big difference between what happened this year and what happened 2 years ago with Mark Trestman, when it was pretty obvious that this whole thing needed to be blown up and major changes being made, because he did lose the locker room. And it wasn't just him, it was other coaches, and I think that there was a level of disrespect towards the general manager, too, with some of the moves that were made and the way in which they were handled, even just from a public relations standpoint, right? For instance, the Brian Urlacher goodbye. You know, that's one of the all-time greatest players in franchise history, and it wasn't handled in a very good manner, and I think that that upset people within the organization too. So that's where it was a little bit more obvious that changes need to be made. You know, talking to the players after the game in Minnesota on Sunday and talking to the players in the locker room on Monday when they cleaned out their lockers at Halas Hall, it was pretty obvious that these players still believe in the coaching staff. So I certainly understand why fans are frustrated with John Fox at times. The losing doesn't help. The poor clock management is frustrating, I think. But I think the biggest thing is that the players still believe in these guys. And as long as they do, after 2 years, then I think it's okay to bring back a head coach and show some patience, which is something right now that George McCaskey admitted to us today. It's kind of hard for him to do because he's not a very patient man, but he promised Ryan Pace he would be patient, and so far he's you know, showing that patience for at least one more year.
Sometimes the public perception of a player can be different than maybe the perception in the locker room from the players. And so outwardly, mm-hmm. people felt like, well, the only reason that John Fox or that they have to keep Jay Cutler is because of his contract. You know, that there's dollars that are going to be spent and you need to make use of them. You really don't have anybody better. But when you talk to players or you hear some of the reports that you guys have from the locker room, the players seem to be in at least have his back. You know, they're supportive.
They do?
Of Jay Cutler?
Are they in him?
Yeah, I think for the most part they
really?
Are.
Really?
I do think for the most part. Now, there's no question that when Jay first got here that it was hard for him to win over those guys, especially on defense, that were here for a long time in that locker room before he got there. I also think Jay was a different person back then. He, you know, wasn't as mature and the way he handled things, and so I do think that that's, and that continues to, he probably still rubs some people the wrong way, sure. But
maybe he should just smile more.
Yeah, I know.
Seriously.
I know, but
unenthusiastic, and he just is really looks like a mope.
But see, Wendy, I think that's a perfect example of why I understand why that frustrates fans, but I don't think his teammates care.
Yeah,
if
I guess.
He's smiling. You know
I
what I mean? Like
that's
that,
true.
That's not something they care about. So,
no, they'd probably be worried about it. Boy, that Cutler keeps smiling too much.
Right. We want some mopey guys.
To answer your question earlier, though, Wendy, about kind of what's the plan with Jay.
Yeah.
Look, Ryan Pace talked very openly today about the fact that there could be changes with the quarterback spot, and I don't think that surprises anyone. He said sat down with Jay on Monday, as he sat down with a lot of players on Monday, and was very open and honest about the possibilities. And it's very possible Jay's not back next season. So the way this is going to play out is, you know, first and foremost, you try to trade him if there is a trade market for Jay Cutler.
Yeah,
and there
who
might
wants
be.
Him?
Well, the contract is still relatively friendly when you actually put it in the context of the quarterbacks and the rest of the NFL. Even at his age, I don't know exactly what you can get for him. That market probably hasn't quite been set yet, but there's always a team desperate for a quarterback.
We are. And where do find one?
And they're not the only one. So, but if that's not a, if that's not possible, if it doesn't, if no one wants him, well then, you know, I still wouldn't rule out him possibly coming back. I just think letting him go for absolutely nothing only makes sense if you just don't want to pay that money. And he'll, if you keep him for all next year and he plays in all 16 games, he'll earn $15 million. But if he does actually play in all 16 games, then he might actually be worth it. You know, so that's sort of the problem that I think is going on with Jay Cutler right now. If I had to say right now, do I think he's back next year? I'd say probably not, but I wouldn't close the door to that idea completely just yet.
Where do they grow quarterbacks, and why can't we find one or nurture one? I know that there have been some backup quarterbacks that have been bandied about coming to the Bears. One, I can't think of his name because I'm not really.
Is it Tony
the ones
Romo?
From this year?
Tony Romo, I've heard, but just fairly recently, a backup quarterback. Yeah, Garoppolo. Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and see, that's so if there's a market to trade Jay, it'll probably be set first by whether or not the Patriots decide to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. And Jimmy Garoppolo played at Eastern Illinois. There is a connection there because Ryan Pace went to Eastern Illinois. I don't know how much that really matters, but it is a connection that if you connect the dots. He was drafted 2 years ago by the Patriots in the second round. By all accounts, he's still a pretty good quarterback. I liked him a lot coming out that year. He's been Tom Brady's backup, so he's been learning from somebody who's pretty good at football.
Exactly.
And I think it's a lot to give up the number three pick for him. But if you ask me, would I rather take one of these rookies out of the draft this year right out of college or a guy who's at least been in the league for a few years, I would rather have Garoppolo. So, but on the other side, if the Patriots are really going to trade him, when do they ever trade somebody who turns out to be a Hall of Famer? You know, there's something wrong there, right? So I think that's something you got to keep in mind, too.
Well, you look at an organization like that, and Adam, I wanted to get your thoughts on, like, what is the value of being in and kind of experiencing kind of the success of an organization like that? Like, the Patriots are really good, and there's got to be some residue based on that process and the system, so there's got to be some benefits in pulling people from that situation. They've gone on and done well, but they've never done, if you look at it, and you kind of hit on it too, is all these people that the Patriots go that are that they let go that are stars on the Patriots, they just continually retool in different incarnations of successful football, and then these other players go off and just be, I guess, back to themselves.
Yeah, it's funny, because, like, the guys they do let go don't really turn out to be all that great. They don't work out for their new team. Then they take guys, for instance, Shea McClellan, who couldn't do anything here, and they've at least found, you know, a small role for him there, and he's made a few big plays for them this year. And that's just one example. They just claimed Michael Floyd, the wide receiver who just had a DUI in Arizona, and he's already producing and looks like an option for them in the playoffs. So, like I said, they rarely let somebody go who turns out to be pretty good. So I would question why they're trading Jimmy Garoppolo if they do that.
And, I mean, backup quarterbacks have turned out pretty well, Aaron Rodgers. You know what I mean? It doesn't happen all the time, but I don't know. I can't put all the blame on Jay Cutler. I really can't.
I don't either. I think he's been, first of all, there's no question it's been a disappointment. Right. I mean,
the career or just this season?
Well, the career, his time here in Chicago. You thought that was the missing piece, right? Really having a quarterback that talented, and they got close. They made it to the NFC Championship game in 2010, but then they lost when Jay got hurt, and it's just never been the same since. So it'll go down as a disappointment if it's over, but I also agree that it's certainly not been all his fault. There's been a lot of mistakes here made by this organization. Over the last 3-4 years, they destroyed a defense that was really, really good. They made a bad GM hire. They made a bad coaching hire, and they're still recovering from that today. That's why the biggest reason why they're 3-13 was because of the mistakes made a few years ago.
Well, John Fox, it looks as though he's going to be retained there. Your thoughts, the opinions, kind of the reputation that he had coming in, and then you look at this time here with the Bears, which have been disappointment for a variety of different reasons, and some, you know, that are unforeseen and you can't control and just happen in the NFL. But Adam, like, your thoughts is, do you have a different opinion of John Fox now than you did as for the guy that came in as the coach from those other teams?
Probably. While I don't think I think it's smart that they're bringing him back. I've not been completely impressed with, in fact, I haven't been impressed at all with his game day coaching. You know, I think that there's been some clock management issues. There's, you know, there have been games where they look completely overmatched, just from, not just from a talent standpoint, but from also a scheme standpoint. So I think that there's certainly, while he does a good job during the week, I think getting them ready and to play hard, there's improvements he can make as a coach too. And by the way, just to be clear, John Fox is coming back next year, and unless some other, you know, job opening comes out of nowhere for Vic Fangio and Dow Loggins, the two coordinators, they're going to be back too. John Fox did confirm that today. There could be some changes with assistants below them, but not just John Fox, but the two coordinators will be back despite all the criticism that Dow Loggins, the offensive coordinator, faced this season.
I want to be a Bears fan again. I have a lot of Bears sweatshirts and hats that I would like to wear again.
You have to accessorize on game day.
I do, and it's just, it's been such a disappointment. I know it has been to George McCaskey, too. I understand that. My final question to you, Adam Hoge, is with all these injuries that were reported, are you sure the players weren't trying to get injured so they didn't have to go out on the field this year?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Because that's what I would do. I would get so knocked up on that field, and then you sit on the bench, you get paid, and you have to go, hey, I am no part of that.
Well, and that's why I'm not completely surprised that they weren't all that competitive in Week 17 on Sunday against the Vikings. But you know what? I think there's more examples of guys who fought through what they were battling to play in a meaningless game like that. I mean, Willie Young has like 3-4 different injuries and was playing through it on Sunday all the way to the end of the game. So I think there is where you actually have to give them some credit. And like it or not, the amount of injuries that they faced this year were significant enough that it did impact the results on the field. And they're going to look at it. I mean, they keep saying that they're going to research and figure out how they can improve that. I'd like to know how, because it's still football, but you know, Ryan Pace sat up there today and said they're going to do research. They're going to look at what other teams are doing. They're going to try to improve the strength and conditioning, the training, whatever it is, to try to avoid another season with this many injuries.
It's a terrible season, and I wish you're right. I think you mentioned this at the very onset of our conversation, is George McCaskey saying this is a rebuilding period for the Bears. That should have been brought out in the open right away, and I don't think everybody would have so much vitriol for this team right now.
Yeah, I think that's really, that's just a PR thing, but it was a mistake from the beginning, because they kind of, at a very minimum, made it sound like, yeah, maybe in 2 years they could compete, and obviously that's not what happened, and they should have been much more transparent at the beginning, and transparency has been a big problem, I think, with John Fox to begin with, but they just haven't been transparent, so it's a lot of talk right now, guys, and they need to deliver results pretty soon.
When are you on the air next, Adam Hoge? Because it's always a pleasure to listen to you on the weekends.
I'm looking forward to being back Sunday, 3 o'clock on the beat. It's been a long time because we've been in football season, but it'll be fun to get back at it on Sunday.
We'll be listening. Thank you so much, Adam.
All right, thanks, guys.
Chicago Bears insider. We're lucky enough to have him here on WGN's roster as well, Adam Hoge. We're going to take a quick break and then back with more crazy things. Well, it's not that crazy. Bill Leff's not here today. It's 720 WGN. Always a pleasure to talk to Adam Hoge, and I like listening to The Beat on Sundays, too. A bunch of people are on that show. Jared Payton, sometimes Mark Carmen. Who else is on that show? It's a kind of a revolving door of guests, and it's always fascinating. Kevin Powell sometimes.
An eclectic sports group, and of course Adam had mentioned since it's the end of the football season that he'll be having a more active role in that particular program. Of course, we miss it's, you know, Dan Hampton and Ed Obradovich and Glenn. They're always so angry. We talked about trying to meditate and be more – those guys just – they're always upset, and rightfully so, I guess, when you look at what's on the field. But they seem like exceptionally like
OB's upset. OB's going to blow a gasket.
Like, what are they
he
doing?
He does every week.
Yep. I mean,
I've seen a better quarterback who was dead. I mean, I heard that this past weekend.
You wonder if he writes those down in the offseason?
Oh, no.
Oh, that's a good one.
Right from the heart. All right. Speaking of the heart, this is there's been an HBO documentary that Carrie Fisher and her mother Debbie Reynolds put together. It's called Bright Lights. They did it a while ago, and a trailer has come out And yet they both died at the end of 2016. It's shocking to me. Here's a little of the HBO documentary film. It's a little trailer. And remember, Carrie and her mom, Debbie Reynolds, had quite a falling out for many, many years. And then she wrote Postcards from the Edge to kind of help her get through it. They got along. That I never realized that movie with Meryl Streep was based on that book that Carrie Fisher wrote. And they ended up getting along quite well. Here's a little something from the HBO special, Bright Light, starring Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds.
I live next door to each other. Mommy, Mommy, I'm home. You cannot keep that phone. That's from when they first invented cell phones.
Works fine.
All right. Well, that ended very abruptly. Sorry, it's still buffering. I don't have time for buffering. So this is the first trailer. You can go to, it's all over the place. This is Us Magazine. The HBO documentary is going to come out. And basically, Carrie says, I'm my mom's best friend. They lived next door to each other until her death on December 27th, when Carrie Fisher unexpectedly had a massive heart attack on the tail end of a flight from London to L.A., after she passed away, Debbie Reynolds pretty much had, do you have the quote of what she said?
Yeah. And it's one of those things. And you hear about situations like that, whether it's family members or couples, you know, that have been together a long time or have that really, really close relationship. And the passing of one of them is just too devastating physically for the other person to deal with. And sometimes you can make, and we always hear that will to live. And if you've lost that, and if you've decided that you just, you know, would rather be with that person than alive, that can happen. So the exact words for, and what they've confirmed, for Debbie Reynolds is, her exact words are, I miss her so much. I want to be with Carrie. Those were,
it's so sad, it's so heartbreaking, and yet it's so beautiful, isn't it?
I mean, you want to, here's the thing, is you want to feel bad anytime somebody passes away. It is, you know, on the surface and on paper, it is a tragic moment, and certainly so many friends and family, you don't want to lose those people. But if that's the dying wish of a person that in all respects has had a very full life, you know, this isn't somebody that's young and has so much more to do. She felt like she'd accomplished all, and just, you know, much of a life was very public, right? So many, you know, trials and tribulations and just great moments. And the relationship that they had was one of the things that she valued the most. And when that was taken away from her, she really didn't feel at that stage in her life that she had anything to live for, you know? And so she, and it's weird to think that you can make that decision to just die.
Well, can you die from a broken heart? We're going to find that out after the news, because you've heard it. You've heard like these spouses who have been married for 90 years or whatever. Not 90 years, but they've been married for quite a long time. And one of the spouses dies, and sometimes within hours.
Sometimes within hours, sometimes within months, sometimes. But either way, they don't find whatever kind of fulfilling situation.
No point of living anymore.
Yeah, that's kind of like this. Or they miss the person so much. There has been stories, even there was one recently in North Carolina where a couple died holding hands.
I remember that. Well, we'll discuss this after the news. We're going to talk to a cardiologist from the North Shore University Health System, Dr. Philip Kraus. Can you die of a broken heart? We will find out. It's coming up soon, 720 WGN. I'm not ready to be a 2. I don't want single digits for our weather.
You'll never be a 2, honey.
I don't know if that's
Steve, your mic is on.
Hello.
All right. So thank you, Steve, by the way. It's Wendy Snyder along with Dane Neal, who's in for Bill Left today. He worked his hard day yesterday, and now he's got some more time off. Carrie Fisher passed away. Being married to the Star Wars fan that I am, it was tragic for a lot of people, but Jimmy Mack was like, oh, wow, we heard this news, how she's in terrible shape. She lost consciousness on the plane. Don't know that she's going to make it. So it was we kind of expected it, I guess. But then when you heard the news Carrie Fisher has died, it was like, oh, my God, it's so tragic. Well, very soon thereafter, her sweet mother, Debbie Reynolds, passes away. This is the next day. And Carrie passes away. The son, I think it's Scott Fisher, was saying that his mom had this quote saying, what, I don't want to live without her?
They were, well, kind of the gist of that. And I think that's the context of what it is. And they were very, very close. And I guess her last words were, I miss her so much. I want to be with Carrie. And then she died. And it does make you think that, and we've all heard stories of, or maybe even have stories of relatives who've had, you know, had a long life together. And then once one passes away, the other one unexpectedly passes away. Sometimes the first one, you know, is sick for a while, or there's an illness. And then the other one is just kind of out of the blue, you know, that they die within either a short time, none shorter than the one that was recently, and we talked about it off the air, Wendy, from People Magazine, 59 years together, Margaret and Don Living Good, that's their name. So there's
That's ironic.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. And they actually died within hours of each other. They got a chance. They had both been sick and in the hospital. The hospital workers moved them together. They held hands, and they were looking at each other, and then she died, and he died, you know, a handful of hours later. And he said it basically like he's so excited to go and be with her. So that they can take this last year. And he said it was going to be like their honeymoon all over again. So you want to feel bad because people are dying, but obviously
it's a beautiful way to go.
Yeah. This is what this is what they want.
And it was Todd Fisher, by the way. I'm sorry, not Scott Fisher. Todd Fisher was Carrie's brother, who was on 2020, who said Debbie died of a broken heart. And is that possible? We're about to find out. Dr. Philip Krause on the line with us, cardiologist for North Shore University Health System. Hi, Dr. Krause.
Good afternoon, Wendy and Nate.
All right, so here's another. We talked about this a little before we got you on the air, and a listener had texted us. My grandparents were married for 60 years. After the funeral procession for my grandmother passed by the house, I guess her grandfather didn't attend the services, he said he was going to take a nap, and then he died. So
remarkable.
That's like the same day.
Not the first time. Right. Not the first time we've heard that. I've heard it from a number of patients.
Doug Flutie's parents.
Parents and grandparents go within... within a year or even less within each other, depending on the age.
Doug Flutie, former Chicago Bear for a little while, his parents died of heart attacks within hours of each other. I remember that happened earlier this year. It's not uncommon, is it?
It's not uncommon, number one. Number two, we have to really be sure that we have the correct diagnosis. So in the case of Carrie Fisher that you brought up, as well as Debbie Reynolds, we still haven't received information, at least in the lay press, as to the cause of either death. We understand that Carrie Fisher had substance abuse problems in the past, but she was a female over 50. We can presume that she was at least perimenopausal, and that's a risk. So we don't know whether she actually had a heart attack, which refers to an obstruction or a blockage of the coronary artery that leads to diminished blood flow and heart weakness.
It's also reported that she smoked. She was maybe a little overweight. It's like kind of the perfect storm, isn't it?
It is, and this actually is a very good opportunity to talk about women and heart disease and the risk for cardiovascular disease. We talked about this about a week and a half ago in late December about the risk of cold exposure, and now we have an opportunity to talk about women and heart disease also relating to men. The risk factors for coronary disease include smoking, diabetes, family history, which is significant and probably the most important risk factor, as well as high blood pressure. And high cholesterol. So,
what if one of those are good? Because now I'm looking at, wow, heart disease runs in my family, you know, perimenopausal. Great,
correct.
I don't get periods anymore, but I'm going to have a heart attack.
No, not necessarily, because if you go to your physician and get a good cholesterol profile and a good risk factor evaluation, you may find out that your protective HDL or good cholesterol is in the high range, which may protect you from future events. The important thing is that we modify our modifiable risk factors, including making sure that we quit smoking if we're smoking, never start if we're young, making sure that our cholesterol is under good control and our diabetes as well as blood pressure is under good control.
We all have to be careful, and I think all the the modifiable risk factors and all of those things. And you see that heart disease is something that we all have to watch out for, and that's a great opportunity to mention some of those risk factors and the things that we can do. With this whole broken heart syndrome, it's one of those where it kind of comes out of the blue. They call it a broken heart. I used to think, before this, it's gotten so much attention and we've really kind of focused in on it. I used to think it was just it's obviously in your head. You feel bad, you feel upset, you're sad, whether it's a relationship or a loved one or some kind of situation where you've got a quote-unquote broken heart. But actually, I'd done a little bit of checking, and doctor, if you can explain a little bit, that something actually happens with your heart and your blood vessels when you get these kind of stressors in your life.
Absolutely. This has been described back in 1990 by the Japanese. The other term is called Takotsubo cardiomyopathy, or broken heart syndrome. The reason they call it
having too many tacos, I think.
Maybe.
That was a great sumo wrestler, Takotsubo.
Too many sausages over down on the south side.
Right.
The concern is that the heart dilates in response to stress. Takotsubo is termed by the Japanese because it's actually T-A-K-O-T-S-U-B-O. It's a Japanese term for octopus trap. The heart assumes this global, globular, circular shape, like a sphere rather than an egg or elliptical shape. And when that happens, it looks like an octopus trap that the Japanese use to capture octopi.
Interesting.
The good thing is that this is rarely fatal, number one. Number two, it's typically seen in females age 60 to 75 or 80, and it is associated with physiologic or psychologic stress. So we say that someone who has a significant emotional event, such as death of a loved one, loss of a spouse, financial issues, hardships, severe illness. We've even seen it in patients who are moving from a house that they've raised their family. Now one of the spouse dies, or maybe they both are still alive, but they're moving to a condo or assisted living, and that's a stress for them.
Yeah.
And even just the fact of picking up boxes. We've even had stories. I've actually had quite a significant experience with this diagnosis, that the patients are given emotional stress from giving lectures, not well-received lectures, and gives them stress. They come in with chest pain. It looks like a heart attack when they come in. Their EKG is abnormal. The cardiac markers, these blood tests, can be abnormal. But when we take them to the cath lab for a coronary angiogram to look at the arteries of the heart, called coronary angiography, the arteries really look quite normal or minimally narrowed. So this is not truly a heart attack with blockage, but the wall motion of the heart is abnormal. The front wall and the side walls of the heart just don't contract normally. The good news is that 90% of these, mostly women, return to normal within 2 to 4 weeks.
Really?
That's correct. This is entirely reversible in a great majority of cases.
Now, Doctor, you mentioned the phenomenon, and typically you've got women 70s and 80s and things like that. Is it that it's not happening to younger women, or that maybe when you're in kind of that older stage of life, you're not able to withstand the stress, so it ends up manifesting itself and ends up killing you?
Yeah, it's not. We're not sure exactly what the underlying pathology is in terms of why women are more prone to it. It may be just the size of the vessels. It may be that women are more prone because of the size of what we call the microvasculature, or the very small vessels that we cannot see on an angiogram. But there is something called an adrenergic response, the fight or flight response that we may have heard of.
I have that every day. That's kind of how I, you know, spark myself for a show every day.
Well,
getting through traffic.
Well, that's up to your partner to get you cooled off.
Pardon me?
It's up to your partner to help you get cooled down.
Well,
the issue is that there's a very high intensity stress and releases these hormones and epinephrine.
Cortisol?
And mostly epinephrine that can lead to this dilation that's temporary. It's rarely fatal, but if a patient doesn't come in and ignores their symptoms of shortness of breath, chest discomfort, heaviness, and even a change in exercise tolerance, it could lead to heart weakness that, if not treated appropriately, can lead to deadly ventricular arrhythmias or deadly rhythm trouble.
Well, it's a good time to talk about our heart. Dr. Philip Krause is on the line with us, a cardiologist for North Shore University Health System. Quick break if you have a question, 312-981-7200. It's Wendy Snyder. It's Dane Neal in for Bill Leff here on 720 WGN. We started talking about dying of a broken heart because of Carrie Fisher and her mother, Debbie Reynolds. And then somebody just said, you know, if Debbie said, I can't go on without Carrie, what is Todd Fisher, chopped liver? Why can't she go on for him? So a listener pointed that out to us. Dr. Philip Krause on the line with us right now, cardiologist for North Shore University Health System. When someone passed along news of Carrie Fisher, a lot of people were including women need to pay attention to heart health, and women have different symptoms if they are having a heart attack than men do, don't they?
That's exactly right, and it's timely because February is National Heart Month. And women in heart disease especially, we need to be careful because the women may present differently than men. Men typically can have classic symptoms of what we call angina pectoris, or pain from diminished blood flow to the heart, which may be chest pressure, heaviness, tightness, a squeezing sensation, shortness of breath, and sweating. Where women may have those symptoms, but more frequently they have some so-called atypical symptoms, where it may just be a change in exercise tolerance, can only play two or three sets of tennis when they previously played five or six, could be nausea, shoulder pain, pain between the shoulder blades, or shortness of breath up the stairs. So it may be subtle.
Why is there a difference?
We're not quite sure. It may just be the way that the cardio neuro system is wired in women. It could be the size of the vessels. One of the reasons is that the women have more comorbidities, associated illnesses such as diabetes. So while women may not present the same, they are actually sicker when they do show up with heart attacks. They're more severe. They may not have the type of artery blockage that men have with, in terms of 100% blockage, but may they may come in with a 99 or a 95% blockage in more vessels. So they're actually sicker than men when they come in, and their mortality rates or their death rates are actually higher than men when they present with heart attack.
We complain less, though. I think that's what it is. Dane, did you have something?
Well, here's one of the questions. And knowing a little bit about what we know, and of course, you've got to check all of those lifestyle situations and genetics and things like that and be on top of that. But doctor, do you have any kind of system or process that if a loved one kind of passes away and they have sort of that co-person, either that spouse or loved one, where there's a process where you can kind of get people involved to uplift that person or kind of convince them that there's things to live for and mitigate a little bit of the stressors that might kind of lend them to say, well, you know, I've got nothing left to live for. I'm just going to die. Does that ever work?
Absolutely, it does. It's a really important point that you bring up, Dane, that actually what we call post-MI or after heart attack depression is a significant cause for concern and a significant cause for repeat hospitalization and even death. So we've actually had studies where we get psychologists in during hospitalization in patients who've had a heart attack to get them to talk through this. A lot of people think that because of this illness that they're never going to be the same again, which is typically untrue. We can usually preserve heart function if patients come in quickly, that they're able to resume their previous functional status and do all the things that they were able to do before in many cases. The other issue is that the depression can be associated for a number of reasons, and that definitely needs to be treated. So one of the biggest points is that they have a support network, that these patients have a network of support to help them through this post-MI or post-event phase. So support from family, support groups. We even offer support groups through cardiac rehabilitation. And cardiac rehabilitation is one of not only physiologic ways, but psychologic ways to get people back on their feet again.
All right. This is not fair to do to you because we don't have very much time left. But there's an anonymous caller, which intrigues me when someone doesn't want to leave their real name. Anonymous, your father has survived many things. Your question for Dr. Krause?
Well, okay, my father, by the way, hi, thank you for taking my call, Wendy,
sure.
And Dr. Krause. My father has survived 3 bouts of cancer, 3 heart attacks, a brain hemorrhage, a quadruple bypass, and a triple bypass, not in that order. How is he still functioning, and how good is his heart?
Yeah, it's impossible to tell without seeing your father in
his consultation. His luck is doing pretty well, though.
Right. It just may be that he's recovered and has had very good, excellent health care, and he's taking the medications that he's supposed to take. But it's impossible to tell without looking at the heart function through an angiogram, through an echocardiogram, and a full physical examination. But it gives us an opportunity, once again, for people to make sure that they get a cardiac evaluation, get their risk factors evaluated, and take the medications that are prescribed for them on a regular basis.
Continued success with or luck with your father, Anonymous. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Wendy. You're the best. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And really quickly, some doctors recommend that you get a heart scan. I got one. Jerry, you had a question for Dr. Krause?
Yes. My grandmother and dad both died from heart attack. And I always get that in the mail. To go have a heart scan
for like $79.
Should I consider doing it?
The heart scan may give you a false sense of security because the heart scan typically looks at plaque but focuses on calcium score, and you can have artery blockages without a lot of calcium, especially in the younger age. We reserve heart scan for a minority of people, and the better way to go, in my opinion, is to see your general internist, make sure you have a risk factor evaluation, and find out if a stress test with or without imaging may be more appropriate.
So that's a little more of a telltale thing, the stress test, more than just a heart scan.
We do far more stress tests than scanning on a daily basis.
There you go, Jerry. Good luck.
Thanks so much for your help. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. You can die from a broken heart, so our best advice is to take care of your heart. If you'd like to learn more, you can go to northshore.org. Dr. Philip Krause, cardiologist for the North Shore University Health System, thanks so much for talking with us today. Happy New Year.
Thank you. You as well.
Thank you. All right, quick break, and then we've got news, and we've got a little more show with you, Dane Neal.
Woo-hoo.
In for Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve. What a fantastic job today. Give yourself a raise, will you?
I'll do it.
Thank you. Yesterday, Steve, do you remember we were talking about Inauguration Day and if you were invited to the White House for...
Yes.
This was kind of unclear because Bill was saying, where's the inaugural ball being held?
Well,
it's not at the White House.
There's a bunch of them. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you are... in Washington, the smell of marijuana may fill the air when Donald Trump takes his oath as president because there are pot activists out there who plan to pass out free joints a few hours before the inauguration, and it's completely legal.
Is this in defiance, or is this celebratory passing out of the...
Does it say where?
I'll get you the address. Why are you covering it?
Well, it's news.
According to WUSA 9, the recently passed Initiative 71 makes it legal in Washington, D.C. to possess 2 ounces or less of weed, to grow it, and to give it away, but still illegal to sell it. So you can give free joints to people. Free weed. Did you see what they did with the Hollywood sign, too, over New Year's?
Yeah,
Hollyweed. How could nobody notice that, by the way? I mean, that sign is looked at by...
Isn't it lit up all the time,
all
too?
The time.
Okay.
How does that happen? All right, get back to Washington. After toking up, activists will march on the National Mall to demand federal legalization of recreational marijuana use. Can they stop demanding it? I'm pretty sure it's going to be legal all throughout our country in a few years,
well,
don't you?
Well, I mean, that could be one of the policy areas that changes in the next few years.
Oh.
I guess. Currently, pot's being legalized slowly on a state-by-state basis. Users will be encouraged to light up about 4 minutes into Trump's inaugural address. Boy, they have this all planned to a T.
And light up.
Well, it should be 4 minutes and 20 seconds into the inaugural address. They screwed up, not 4 minutes.
I think you're right in the way that it doesn't necessarily... Is it a protest, right? As Steve kind of intimated, that they kind of won, right? That there's... That the whole, marijuana situation is becoming legalized in more and more, inclusive ways where it isn't just medicinal, recreational. And here, this is another situation like that. What I always wondered with this, and I don't want to be necessarily a downer, but for all of those people that are in prison or serving sentences based on marijuana possession, if you could be like, hey, if they get any leniency or something like, hey, we're not really worried about that anymore. Or if it's just, well, at the time, technically, that's the way it was.
All right. Well, I want to know who partakes in it. According to Initiative 71, legal in Washington, D.C., to possess 2 ounces or less of weed. How many ounces are in a joint? This isn't a joke. I'm just saying, how much is 2 ounces?
I haven't really done any of those measurements in a very, very, very long time, but I'm guessing no ounces. Because an ounce, I think, is a large amount. You wouldn't have that. That would be a Cheech and Chong size.
Well, see, that's what I'm thinking. But if you're walking around with a bag of weed, how much is 2 ounces?
A lot. I know that much. That's a lot.
What's a dime bag back in the day? It was just enough for, I don't know, 4 or 5 joints. Now, what's an ounce?
A lot.
Like a whole baggie, probably. If you'll remember back to movies, right, where they, kind of showcase that lifestyle, they would show like the bag that would be held in the maybe drug lingo term, a quarter, right? And it would be, somewhere around an inch or so.
Oh, that's like a full baggie, man.
Yeah. Welcome to Washington.
Listen, please, Todd Manley, do not check my history and my Google search. All I did was 2 ounces of weed and a big baggie comes up. It's like a full sandwich
it's
bag.
A
that's
you
a lot
you don't
of weed.
Need that much. That's, yeah, way too much.
It's America.
Two ounces or less of weed.
Well, I mean, he's deciding what Americans need or don't need, and I think that's a slippery slope. So, but when you'd mentioned how many ounces were in a particular, if you're looking at a, you know, a personal size joint was the word I think that you used, it would be a lot. You know,
you could get like 100 joints out of this.
So there's still a value there, I guess, right?
Depends how big you make them, I guess. Well, wow, that seems like a lot. It's legal to have 2 ounces of weed? That no one needs that much. For how long? Like a month? 2 ounces a month? How does it go?
I don't know.
If you're caught with anything over 2 ounces, you get busted. But that's a lot of weed. How long does that last you?
Well, now, Wendy, this isn't just for personal uses in some states. That it is just for personal consumption. Here, you're either encouraged or entitled, right, to give it away. So this would be enough to share, you know, with your fellow.
You could share with a whole group of people.
Apparently that's something that's allowed.
God, I am so unhip when it comes to the drug world. All right. We have to take a quick break, but I think.
You can't sell it, though. You got to give it away. You got to pay it forward.
I want to see what John has to say because I think he's a pothead who wants to talk. I can't tell you how surprised I am that that's what 2 ounces looks like. It's like almost a full baggie, unless I'm getting this wrong.
I don't think you are. And in some states, you're looking.
It's from 420magazine.com. It has to be right.
Well, I think in some states, they're still, you know, kind of easing into it on the medicinal side. And on some states, it's, you know, for your own personal use. I'm a little surprised, right? Because that does seem like a pretty significant amount. And then you're allowed to give it away. Because you could think about this. You know, an enterprising, you know, salesperson or entrepreneur could just decide, like, I'm just giving you this, but maybe you'll make a deposit in my bank account later.
No.
Come on.
This is right in front of the White House. All right. 28. See, I just love the potheads listening. 1 gram per joint, 7 grams per ounce. So I can't do the math.
Seems
and
like
I haven't
the drug
even
world
had
offers
joint.
An entry point into the math and science world as well. So you're looking at some positives there.
1 ounce used to equal 1 shot glass full. Dude, you're drinking the wrong stuff. And someone may be carrying 2 ounces because they just purchased it and were traveling home, not necessarily carrying it with them so they would use it in one day. That's a lot of weed. An ounce by me goes for $300 to $350.
I'm not really aware of the going rate. Again,
God,
I'm air quoting.
So naive. I am so naive. All right, quick break, 312-981-7200. It is Bill Leff on vacation. It's Dane Neal in his stead. And it's Wendy Snyder on 720 WGN. All right, we are talking about free marijuana. It's Dane Neal. It's Wendy Snyder. Inauguration Day in Washington, D.C. Initiative 71 was recently passed, and that makes it legal in Washington, D.C. to possess 2 ounces or less of weed, to grow it, to give it away, give it away, give it away, give it away, yeah, but it's still illegal to sell it. So I was just curious as to how much 2 ounces of weed was, and I just kind of, you can look at my history bar management, 2 ounces of weed, and I got 420magazine.com put a picture, and it looks like a pretty full baggie. So I wondered, how many joints do you get out of that? Because I think that's too much for people to be walking around with. So here's the math problem.
Well, and you wonder here's in some places there are, in Colorado, there's dispensaries, right, where you can go ahead and buy it or it's available.
We have that here too.
For the medical marijuana. I think in Colorado you can there's places where you can buy it. You know, it's maybe like a duty free shop kind of feeling to it where you can do that in. But because you wonder, you know, if you're in Washington, D.C., it's wonderful to have it be legal, I guess, if that's what you want to do. But then you have to wait till someone comes up and gives it to you because you're not able to buy it. And so,
right, because they check your license. And if you have an Illinois license, you can't go buy it in a state that it's legal, can you?
Yeah, I'm not sure how all of that.
I don't think you can.
I don't know if you're able to, right, to just be able to go. And in that state, if it's legal, you can go ahead and do that. Maybe. But it says in Washington, D.C., you can give it to other people. And if you don't have any, I guess you'd have to wait for someone to give it to you. And you couldn't go out there and purchase it. In Nevada, they have personal use, cultivation, and possession. So you can grow your own. So there you can't have any more than 12 plants, and you have to have it be.
You can grow it in Washington. You can, like we said, give it away, grow it, but you can't sell it.
And some of the rules, okay, good. Some of the rules is that the cultivation has to take place within a closet room, greenhouse, or other enclosed area. Well, just like safety with the guns, you have to have a special gun safe to keep your guns. You can't just grow it out front. You have to have it in a, you know, in an environment.
It's not meant to be grown outside or in a greenhouse. Green, get it?
Yeah. Well, I don't think they want just, you know, maybe, you know, kids or something, or maybe house pets.
The squirrels.
We want to maintain the environment there.
Well, getting back to this, how much is 28 ounces? A listener has says 1 ounce equals 28 grams. And you're allowed 2 ounces. I hate story problems. 1 ounce is 28 grams. And friends of mine who roll joints use maybe 1 gram per joint. So 2 ounces, about 56 joints. P.S. I prefer a pipe. It does save the trouble. But so everyone is entitled to have 56 joints on them in Washington, D.C.? That seems too much.
Well, 2 ounces seems like a lot. In Maine, you're allowed to have 2.5 ounces. Of prepared 2.5 ounces and up to 6 immature plants or seedlings to a person. Somebody comes in and like counts your plants and decides how mature they are. I'm just saying.
Okay. You know, I really am all for legalizing marijuana. I really am. I think more people have trouble with alcohol than they do weed, but 2 ounces is a lot to carry on your person or someone else's person for that matter.
In Massachusetts, it's only 10 ounces. You're allowed to process up to 10 ounces, and any marijuana produced, the plants cultivated on the premise and processing, 6 plants. So I think the 10 ounces seems like a lot. That seems like a business. Got to get a lot of friends to give away.
I know. Well, if you're anywhere near Washington, D.C. During the on Inauguration Day, which is January 20th, you can get the people will be giving away free weed. And so smoke them if you got them. Joe, are you going to Washington, D.C. for a free joint?
No, but I would have about 50 years ago. but I tell you what, 56 joints off of 2 ounces of pot have to be humongous joints. Because you can get probably 40, 45 joints from 1 ounce.
God, my math is so off.
Yeah, I mean, that's back what I remember because we used to do that quite a bit. And they were decent cigarette size, almost joints, but that was a lot of years ago.
All right, so a 2 ounce bag would be almost a full sandwich size baggie, correct?
Without a doubt.
That's too much. People don't need all that pot.
Look at you, legislating.
Depends on how much you smoke it.
I guess that is it. All right, well, Joe, thank you so much. Smoke them if you got them. Oh, he hung up on himself. Sorry. All right, that's going on Inauguration Day, so be on the lookout for that. Dane, I would like to thank you for sitting in for Bill Leff.
Oh, thanks for having me, and I hope Bill had a great day. I wonder what he's doing he's recharging his batteries, you know that.
He did his one day for the 2017. He came back yesterday.
Did he mention to you yesterday, like, what he was looking forward to doing today, maybe working on a model, maybe a Sudoku?
He doesn't do a Sudoku.
I'm just saying, I mean, maybe taking up a new, because it's that resolution time period. So maybe he's thinking that he wants to, you know, take up a new hobby.
I think he said he wanted to build more models in 2017.
Okay, I could see him doing that. Models of
like
what?
Like Playboy models,
oh,
maybe.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure. Tomorrow on the show, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, I believe Frank Fontana will be sitting in during the first half of the show from 10 to noon.
Correct.
Then you got Bertrand on from noon to 1 with the Wintrust Business Lunch.
To my understanding, yep.
And then Dean Richards, right?
Yes.
From Dane to Dean. That's what's going on. So Dean Richards will be on for the second half of the show tomorrow. Then on Friday... my husband Jimmy Mack and I will be doing the first half from 10 to noon because we have to go head to head with Bob and Marianne. They have to have a married couple on. So that's what we're doing from 10 to noon on Friday.
True.
And then who's the second half on Friday? Oh, Mike Toomey.
Mike Toomey, yep.
Oh, that'll be fun from WGN Morning TV News.
So with you and Jimmy Mack, of course, it's legendary. It's very famous, his affinity for Star Wars from the get-go. Knows absolutely everything.
We're not
about
talking Star Wars.
Are you guys going to do any voices? Does anybody do a Star Wars character voice?
We're not talking Star
Wars.
Oh,
never mind then. All right, then.
He's forbidden to talk Star Wars. Who's Monday? Because I don't think Bill's back on Monday.
I don't think that is known yet. I think that's still being sorted out.
Am I in on Monday?
We're still determining that.
Okay. We will take a break. Is Ro in on Monday? Is he back today?
I think it's Brian Noonan.
Oh, hi, Brian. Who's in today? Roe and Hannah. Roe and Anna are back? Roe and Hannah. Oh. I see why Roe does this, because it's really easy. Instead of Roe and Anna, it's Roe and Hannah. So, all right. Well, we will say hi to them next. It's thank you so much, Dane, for filling in. I had a fun time
Thanks
with you.
Thanks for having us. It's been awesome.
Us?
That's me.
You and the boys?
Yep. Me and my thought process and all of my facts.
All right. We'll say hello to Roe and Hannah. I feel like I have a speech impediment, but they will be in next at 720. It's WGN.